It's time for Twig This Week at Google. What a great show we have for you. Lamar Wilson is here. He's going to talk about YouTube, the brand new changes there. Matt Cutts, spam fighter at Google himself, will be here. And Jeff and Gina, too, to talk about all the latest, including Google Zeitgeist. What were the most searched terms of 2012? Stay tuned. You'll find out on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by Cachefly. CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google. Episode 176, recorded December 12th, 2012. YOLO. That's a thing? This Week in Google is brought to you by Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it right from your desk. For our special offer, go to Stamps.com, click the microphone, and enter Twig. That's Stamps.com. Enter Twig is the offer code. And by Ford. Featuring Bliss, the blind spot information system with cross-traffic alert and active park assist. Check out these available features on the 2013 Ford Fusion and 2013 Ford Taurus. Or learn more at Ford.com/technology. And by Squarespace, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website, blog, or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to Squarespace.com and use the offer code TWIG12. And don't forget to try out the newly launched developer platform for complete code control. It's time for Twig This Week in Google with a great Google cast, a Googlicious cast today, starting with Gina Trapani of SmarterWare.org, ThinkUp.com, founding editor of Lifehacker and an editorial writer for the New York Times. We'll talk about that in a moment.
Oh, hello.
Hello. Welcome. And new mama.
Yeah.
Can you still say new mama? I guess you can.
Yeah, 2.5 months.
Yeah.
So in the first three.
Yeah.
New.
Settling in.
Settling in, settling in.
Etta's first Christmas.
Oh, yeah.
Mm.
Spoilage comes next.
Oh, yeah. Wow, look at that.
It's graduation today here or tomorrow at CUNY, so I have my robe and my hat and my little...
Well, that's neat. And it's a tassel. Now, do you wear the robes of your own university or do you wear the CUNY?
Yes. Yes, even though I only have a bachelor's degree, but yes, I wear Northwestern.
You have to wear it. So there's different colors. So all the professors come out. I know this because my dad was a professor. Come out and they're different. He went to Columbia, so he has, I think it was royal blue with black.
I have purple and orange.
Yeah, that's cool.
Quite
I like
fetching.
That. But wait a minute. It's December. You'd have graduation in June.
We're a year and a half program.
Ah.
We have Ira Glass as our commencement speaker.
Ooh, that's good.
Very cool. And I will put up the links to the video when it's up.
As they say in Aaron Sorkin movies about journalism, good get.
Yeah. I'll take this off now.
I get all my journalistic terms from Aaron Sorkin.
Aaron Sorkin.
Which shows you how much I know. That's cool. That looks good on you, though. That's a good look. When is graduation? Do we have to rush here?
No, it's tomorrow.
Oh, it's tomorrow. And how many students? Is this from your program, the journalism program?
From our program, with 100 students.
100. Wow, that's awesome.
90, yeah.
Also here from Google itself, Matt Cutts, one of the earliest Google employees.
Too long gone. We have him back.
Hey, good to be back on the show. Thanks for having me.
And he fights spam on the Google web search results and does not speak for Google unless you ask him about spam.
Thanks for that advanced disclaimer in case I say anything really stupid and get in trouble.
But he's such a trusted, long-time employee there that he's actually allowed to do this show, which says
Enjoy
something.
It.
Yeah.
It's a ton of fun to be on.
We love having you. We're going to put off the changelog a little bit because we have another guest to talk a little bit about YouTube. Lamar Wilson is also here.
Hey, Lamar.
Hello.
Hey, Lamar. Welcome.
I don't do my crazy high like this because Jeff loves that.
Not you. Let's all do it together.
Hey.
Hey. Gina, come on. Gina. Oh, she's
come on, Gina.
The left side of the aisle is not going for that. Not one bit.
Not at all.
Lamar is a well-known YouTuber.
Yes,
Lamar Wilson is the channel. Comical videos about my everyday life.
That's a new. About, this is new. This is a new name. And
YouTube comment the other day. Can you do a video?
I rebooted the channel a little bit just to make it more personable. I still talk about gadgets and tech stuff, but I try to integrate it into a more personal story. And the audience is responding well.
It's so awesome. 19.5 million video views. Somebody's watching.
Hey.
And as we look at this, you could see the new look at YouTube.
There is a new look, and we're going to talk about
sure
that.
Is.
Is this the new look?
This is the channels haven't changed. It's the other.
It's the front page.
It's the front page, your front the video page.
Let me go to my front. Oh, welcome, it says, to the YouTube homepage.
I love the kind of got it. All right. I'm not that dumb. I got
Let
it.
Me close the ad.
Okay. Yeah, it's like a giant ad.
Which is half the page. And then click got it. And here we go. Here we go. It's got a what to watch section recommended for you because you watched Leistung Gesuchtrecht. In fact, quite a bit. Here's another one recommended because you watched Leistung Gesuchtrecht. This is Scam, Sasquatch, and Supernatural full lecture.
I want to find out what the connections are in their database between these things and Leistung Gesuchtrecht.
Because I watched Big Heads, I get the Zombie Slayer. Because I watched how Nexus Q works, I get a Google I.O. keynote. What's interesting is I'm getting a lot of my own shows, which is, I guess, good.
Which probably shows that you haven't watched your own shows, Leo.
Oh,
I
really?
You watch them.
Uh-huh. I haven't.
Yes.
Because I watched Leistung Gesuchtrecht, it should watch the final episode of the Totally Rad Show, which is full of reggae. Yeah, look, I do not watch my own shows, but I'm pleased as a podcaster that YouTube is in fact putting my shows there. Now, is that why? How does this work? Tell me all, Lamar.
Okay, so last Thursday, YouTube, you know, completely redesigned the site. They gave us a warning here in LA. We went to the YouTube Space LA, the brand new site, and we kind of got a tour of it on Monday, and. You know, overall, it looks great. What YouTube is, and just a little history, I also went to Google a couple weeks ago to see Vic Gundotra and another YouTube guy named Shashir to talk about it's kind of this YouTube and Google Plusification that they're doing. So I kind of got an inside track before this was happening. But what YouTube is trying to do is what they first did is they had 12 pages on YouTube of different content. And so they decided to get rid of the pages to just three, your channel page, the video page, and what's the other page? The homepage.
Now, I have to say that what we just saw was if you are not logged into YouTube, what you get as you just go there. And I think the issue with YouTube is discovery, is it not? They want to.
Absolutely.
And it's not merely discovery. They want you to watch shows. Well, correct me if I'm wrong, Lamar, but I would guess that Google and YouTube are using this as a way to promote shows that promote their agenda, which is to make YouTube be more of an like almost like a TV network, like an established purveyor of quality programming as opposed to groin kick videos.
Right. Now, if you go back to that main page, because there was a bar on the right that I wanted to address.
So go to my page, because this is if after you log in this one. Because I've got to watch, my subscription, social.
Right there is fine, because I wanted to address the right side to answer your question. If you look at the right side.
Oh, yeah, this is where you want to be, recommended channels.
Yeah, now before it used to be recommended videos. The 100% focus right now for YouTube is subscribing. And here's the reason, Leo. There are 4 to 8 million approximate partners. Partners are people who make money like myself. You know, we get ads on the site. However, there are 800 million people who watch, many of whom do not even have accounts who log in and don't even know what subscribe is.
Right.
So they're trying to increase the watch time. So, of course, they're going to have people. They want us to get our audience to log in, to subscribe, to be part of the site. Obviously, you know, they want that data, of course, so they can give better discovery. You know, I think the watch time on YouTube, Matt, correct me if I'm wrong, I think it's 10 minutes now. And they wanted to increase it to about 30. They really want to triple, you know, the usage of someone who's just going to YouTube casually to stay there and watch. And then we get rewarded as partners the longer they stay and search results. And so that's the kind of the reason of this big redesign. It's really about subscribing and about giving attention to channels.
How do you get to be on this recommended channels?
It's algorithm.
Yeah, because I'm looking. Phil DeFranco, that makes sense. 2 million subscribers. It's, Windows 99,000, Vsauce 3, I don't know what that is, 300,000.
It's a science channel. It's actually really good.
It sounds like this is kind of based on what I'm subscribing to, although I see the Ellen DeGeneres show, which is not in any way motivated by anything I've ever watched, I don't think.
I got Ellen recommended, and I was like, oh, my God, they know about me.
Well, they know I'm a lesbian, too. And no, I just have a thing for Anne Hesh. Does that count? Actually, you know why I'm getting this? Because we did watch a bunch of Ellen DeGeneres videos. I think maybe they saw that. But I've never watched Vsauce, but maybe they noticed I watched a lot of science.
Absolutely. So that's the discovery they're trying to do for the channels. And, you know, there may be some lucky people who get pinned there regularly to boost up their numbers because they have popular shows. One of the things you notice on the left side, since you're logged in now, Lee, if you go back to that, is there's that bar on the left side is persistent. So at the bottom, you see your subscriptions, which you could never really see before. So now you get to see channels and you get to see what activity that you haven't seen from them.
I'm so glad to know I'm part of the Kin community.
You subscribe, I guess.
Yeah. I must have subscribed to that at some point. I don't even. So,
why don't you click a video so that I can show you the.
So as I'm. Oh, I know what this is. This is a good friend of mine, Stacey Barcelata, used to be on Tech TV on Call for Help, has a Kin. She's part of the Kin community. So now I'm watching Beth's Christmas Morning Breakfast.
So now on the left side, you see. The guide. So go ahead and click the guide to have that drop down.
Okay, here's my guide. So it's initially collapsed, which is good. So it's kind of out of the way. Although that bar is there, you might as well just. I mean, I don't know what I've gained by having it collapsed.
Like there.
Yeah. Never get lost. Browse videos from the previous page, including the home. Got it. So I'm gonna close that.
Your subscriptions are on the left side. So now if you're watching a video, you don't have to leave the video to go back to the homepage to see, oh, what else can I watch? They have it right there on the left side. What they've done is they move the subscribe button and the title below the video so that you can, you know, they're trying to encourage subscriptions and they want your eyes to be lower to like the video, to share it and things like that. So
what they also probably, I would guess, want to do is hide the comment area. That's what first thing I do is hide that well below the fold.
They don't want to make that very.
Let's not look at that, folks. I don't know if that was intentional, but what do you see, Gina, on your recommended channels besides Ellen?
I got Nerdist.
Good choice.
Rihanna, The New York Times, HBO. I've actually just subscribed to like 12. Just in the time we've been talking, I've subscribed to like 15 different channels.
So it works.
Annoying Orange. It does work.
Wait a minute. Why did they recommend Annoying Orange to you?
I am sure that I watched.
You must have watched some.
Yeah, I've watched some Annoying Orange in the past. I got Twit, although I was already subscribed to Twit, so I got a lot of suggestions to watch Twit shows, which is totally spot on. It kind of turns it into an RSS reader a little bit. It's interesting.
Yeah, I once watched I subscribed to H Plus, that show, and then I got annoyed at it in episode 2. And I'm up to episode 41 of it now in recommendations, so I've got to remember to.
I noticed Phil DeFranco got replaced on my page by Aura TV. Oh, look, you should be watching Al Jazeera. You must be a terrorist, Chad. Look at that. Al Jazeera's right up there. Also, there's Z Frank.
Now,
Chris Perillo.
That is a featured. So that's actually.
Oh, that's looks a paid. Like that's not a paid. Yeah.
I got ABC News, Michael Jackson. I just recently watched Billie Jean.
I got Google Nexus as a channel. It's just the Google Nexus commercials.
Huh. But it does sound like they're paying attention to what you watch, not just on YouTube, but it sounds like they might be paying attention to what you search for.
Yeah, they do. And I would be remiss if I didn't talk about some of the problems. I think if I left here without addressing those, my audience would kill me. So the main page, if you look in the center, if you don't know what's going on, you now see a page of likes, recommendations, comments. If you are subscribed to people, it might say Twit uploaded, Twit added this to a playlist. And that's good for discovery of the 800 million people because I think the average subscriptions are only like 3. So the average person only subscribes to like 3 people. However, we have power users like myself who are furious at this because it takes 3 steps for the user, our subscribers, to go to uploads only where they can see our content. And so what's happened since Thursday, all of our views have dropped about half.
Ooh.
My view, I see it as temporary because I kind of have an open mind. I see what they're doing. But because people are now lost because they have all these recommendations, they can't see my video that I uploaded about an hour, 40 minutes ago, because they see all this other content of people who liked videos, people who commented. So I talked to YouTube. They said what they're going to do is make it sticky where a power user can, by default, just have it go to uploads only. Because I'm going to be honest, if I'm subscribed to you, Leo, I love you, but I don't really care what you like or what you what you comment on and things like that. I want to just see my uploads. And see, and that's one of the biggest problems right now that we're dealing with in this last week.
Hmm. Yeah. Interesting.
So it's, you know, it's bad for us content creators and power users. But like I said, they said they're going to fix it.
It might be more egalitarian, though, right? Could that be part of the reason? I mean,
well, what they didn't want to make it by default uploads only, even though we would love that as creators, because for us,
they want discovery. They don't want you to go the same old ruts, right?
Yeah, and the problem is most people, we look at it from kind of a selfish point of view as creators, but most people who use YouTube don't subscribe to people. They just want to go there. They don't want to see a blank list. They want to see videos. So I understand what YouTube's doing. It doesn't mean I have to like it.
Right.
You know, so I hope they definitely fix that. I think the main thing, you know, they're trying to slowly integrate Google Plus. And we talked about this a couple weeks ago with when you weren't here. About them trying to kind of Google-fy YouTube. I told them when I went to go visit that I wish they would find a better way to educate power users about what they're going to do ahead of time. There was a good start that we had the little private meeting before, but I think they just need to do more. I advocated for some kind of advocate for, you know, YouTube or Google Plus, someone to speak on behalf. That's a creator. I think Phil DeFranco did a really good video ahead of time. We need more of those of people to explain, hey, I know this looks confusing to you, users. Here's how you fix it. And maybe it'll make for a better experience.
Yeah, I think over time, people will figure that part out. There's also a social button, which is interesting. Google Plus, of course, is already connected. But they do have, you can connect Facebook to it. Something didn't work like it was supposed to. Try again. Well, you can connect Twitter to it. So that way, let's authorize Twitter. And that way... Oh, sorry. Something didn't work. So try again. I guess you, in theory, because there's buttons, you could connect those if it just worked.
So anybody you follow, if they share videos.
Right. Unfortunately, right now, it won't let me connect Facebook or Twitter. But Google Plus works. No problem.
I want to say I overall like this. We got to see in L.A. the channel changes. Now, if people are going crazy about this change, the channel changes are going to be unbelievable. We couldn't take pictures of it. We couldn't really give details, but they're going to do that in the first quarter.
Okay.
Of next year. And, you know, they're trying to make it all about discovery. And so us as creators, we kind of have to, we're forced to, we don't have a choice. We kind of have to put ourselves out of the equation and see the bigger picture. That YouTube is focused on getting all these 800 million people in to be part of it instead of just casual viewers.
Right.
So I like what they're doing. I hope my views being cut in half is not permanent.
Jeez.
Or I'm be living with you.
we have a place you can just bed down in the basement here. It's very comfortable. All the YouTube creators will be there soon. So yeah, you're right. Featured has been rotating, and that's Phil DeFranco. It's these are Al Jazeera. These are paid. I have the Wall Street Journal now. So that's probably is. I don't know if Features is paid or it's something that YouTube's doing, and then I'm getting the same recommendations here over and over again below the featured.
Search in the at the search box at the top.
Yeah.
For just for a random topic, you'll see the ability to subscribe even from there, and that's new.
So I'm gonna search for Epic Meal Time, and okay, and now yes, I did mean Epic Meal Time. So let's see. By the way, I get Kraft Cooking School. Videos above that as an ad, which is good. Ah, yes, channel or subscribe. So I can just say subscribe right there. And now I'm subscribed.
I got a KitchenAid ad.
Yeah.
See, on the left, it highlighted it and showed you on the left that you subscribed. Yep. That's another change because a lot of people will click subscribe and not know what that means.
Mm-hmm.
Thus, they never watch the videos.
Right.
So now they see, oh, on the left, that's where I can see all the subscriptions. So they're trying to train the masses on what subscribe is, and I think it's going to be a slow process. I don't know what they're going to do, frankly, when Google Plus and YouTube merges, are they going to go to follow as a word?
Right. Circle.
They're debating it right now.
Yeah. So that's an interesting point. Do you notice as a YouTube creator that there is a correlation between number of subscriptions and number of video views? Do you, in other words, do you want to really promote subscribers? Because, you know, as far as I can tell, subscribing to something doesn't send it to, it's like not like an RSS. It's more like an RSS feed than it is a podcast, for instance.
But it's going to show up in your list of recommended
Now it will
videos.
Show up here on the left. Yeah. Chad, you do YouTube videos. Did you?
So, and I'm sure Lamar will say this, but in the past, it was a normal YouTube user would subscribe, check YouTube in the morning, and then watch the videos that came in from the subscription. So it was a direct correlation.
Okay.
But now, when it's more algorithmic, maybe not.
Yeah, it still is to a point. And the good part is that the as a user, I have an option to go into my subscriptions and check, get email upload. So they will get an email whenever I upload a video.
Right. And I have to say, if I go on the left here, the default is what to watch. But I can also click my then that's the one that's algorithmic. But then I can click my subscriptions, and this will be all activity. And here, Lamar, I can see uploads only. So I can see new uploads, right?
However, that's also a problem because how many steps did that take you?
Yeah.
It took you 3 steps to get to what you wanted to see. And
you know what they should do? Just let it stay there. That's my indication that that's where I wanted to be. It should always load to the last place I went.
Well, that's the problem because if they make it default, most people are only subscribed to a few people. So they'll come to a point where there are no videos there. YouTube. So what they're going to do is make it sticky for people like you and me who are power users who want that feature to keep it sticky. So right. they're definitely going to do it. I wish they would have done it at the rollout because that would have made it life a lot easier for us.
Lamar Wilson's channel is Lamar Wilson with 2 R's, L-A-M-A-R-R Wilson. On YouTube. And Lamar, it's great to see you. Come up and visit us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah, the tyranny of the default is what they call that, isn't it? Cyberdog.
See you, Lamar.
See you, Lamar. Bye-bye.
Bye, Lamar. Thank you.
Good to see you, Lamar.
Let's take a break. We'll come back. Changelog. More Google news than you can stuff a pig with. And it's the end of the year, so Twitter, YouTube, and Google. Google started this years ago with Zeitgeist. Now everybody's doing it. So YouTube, Google, Twitter, and Facebook now all have year-ender videos. We'll have the battle of the year-ender videos also when we come back. First, a word from stamps.com. I don't want you to go to the post office anymore. I don't, especially if you're a pro. If you're a serious person, does a lot of fulfillment, a lot of mailing, your business, you send out invoices or marketing material or if you're a seller on eBay or Amazon and you're just mailing a lot of stuff, last thing you want to do in December is go to the post office because that's the month of the amateurs. That's when the amateur you don't want to be mixed in. You're a pro. Pros use stamps.com. It's the ultimate way to do mailing because it means you can do everything you need to do from your desk. You can print, buy and print postage, U.S. postage from your computer, your printer. You don't need a meter. You don't lease a meter. You don't pay extra for ink. You just use your printer, your computer. The mail carrier comes and picks up packages. You can do it, of course, during their daily run, but you can also call and schedule free pickups. You have a USB scale, so you're always paying exactly the right amount. No postage due. No overpaying. That's what I always do. Put too many stamps on a package because you want to make sure it gets... Never again. With that scale, you just plop the package on the scale. It automatically prints exactly the right amount. And by the way, not just stamps. It prints the mailing label. It gets the address information from your address book or if you use QuickBooks, from Amazon, eBay, PayPal, Etsy. It just pulls that out of there, fills the whole thing in. If you're doing international mailing, it even fills out the international mailing forms. Plus, the post office loves stamps.com so much that they actually give you discounts you cannot get at the post office. Big discounts. So I want you to try stamps.com. We've got a no-risk trial for you, a month trial. It looks pretty good right at the front page there where you say $80. That's good. But no, I can do better. Click that radio microphone in the upper right-hand corner. Enter our offer code, TWIG. Click go. And now it's a $110 bonus value. You get $55 in postage coupons to use over a few months. You get the digital scale. That's a nice thing to have. You get the $5 supply kit and a 4-week trial. All just because you use the word twig. That's easy. Get started today with stamps.com. It's postage pro just for you. For from stamps.com. We thank them for their support of This Week in Google. You want to see, I'm not going to play the whole thing. The Zeitgeist year in review is 2 minutes, 45 seconds. And yeah, you probably,
it's a little obvious.
Yeah, but let's just say, here's to 2012, it says. Here's to the curious. And it shows Felix Baumgartner.
My palms sweat again.
Jumping out of that capsule, 120,000 feet of. It shows, this is the Olympic runner, right?
Right, what's his name?
Yeah, what's his name? It shows the debate between, what's his names? It shows Psy. Here he is. Oppa Gangnam Style. I guess he was really the video of the... There's the SpaceX launch. That's cool. We searched for firsts. The first Higgs boson, the first person cured of HIV. China to launch a manned space mission. Hurricane Sandy. It's kind of, I like these zeitgeists because it also reminds you what happened early in the year, not just recently,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And if you go to the, there's a zeitgeist site that has the tops in all these categories.
That's what I really like. Stop SOPA. Use the Egyptian spring. Or is that Syria? It might be Syria.
This year, I think it'd be Syria, I guess. I don't know.
Well, there's just stuff going on in Egypt, too.
Yeah.
So this is a nice video. I like it. And yeah, so it's is it google.com/zeitgeist?
I think it's the link should be on there.
Oh, yeah, of course.
On
if
that
I
page.
Would just clink Google the link, I'd go to google.com/zeitgeist. How many did you start? When did you start doing this, Matt? Do you remember? It's been a long time.
It's been several years.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's always a hot debate about whether you show the most popular searches, which are like free or Facebook or
right.
whatever.
Boring.
Or whether you show the first derivative, and then you get into, you know, the trending stuff and the stuff that's hot topics.
So that's why it doesn't say the most common search, because you're right, it's stupid. You get trending.
Hotmail,
pre-sex.
Whatever, yeah.
Yeah. So, for instance, in trending searches in entertainment, you got Whitney Houston, number one. Gangnam Style, number two, Hurricanes. Actually, this isn't entertainment. This is searches. Okay. iPad 3. Do you get involved with this, Matt, or is this something? How is this done?
It's kind of interesting. There are some engineers who built a lot of the code to figure out what are the trending topics. But then after that, it goes to a great team of people who sort of look through it and pick out, you know, what categories of searches are especially interesting. And it's a lot of fun because you really do feel like you're looking into what the world is thinking about.
I've always loved Zeitgeist. Oh. Yeah.
Do you know, Matt, do they resolve misspellings? I presume there's many styles of Gangnam people guess.
Yeah, that's always a hot debate. Do you give the exact raw answer? Or do you basically say, well, okay, you're looking at the curated stuff. Oh, this was a bot, you know, and you take that out or something like that.
No, I've noticed over the years it's gotten more and more curated. This is much more editorial than it was in the early days when it really was kind of, you know, because everybody, Yahoo and AltaVista, they all did it. And it, free, you're right, free, naked, sex, all of that was on top. For trending images, One Direction, Selena, and iPhone 5. For athletes, Jeremy Lin, Michael Phelps, and Peyton Manning. For events, Sandy, Kate Middleton, Olympics. For people,
electronics is interesting that it's iPad, but then Samsung.
Oh, yeah.
And then iPad.
Then iPad. This is, I find, now the big thing, and I hope I'm not stealing your numbers, is that your number?
No, I knew better. I knew
that's the story.
Beyond this.
1.2 trillion searches. How much bigger is that than previous years, Matt?
It grows quite a bit every year. And then lately we've seen mobile. And mobile is growing at a phenomenal rate, like at the early days of Google. And so you can see, and maybe not next year, but in a year or two after that, we might cross over and have more searches from mobile. So that's been a big driver of a lot of new searches.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I like Zeitgeist.
I would love to know the different. Well, one thing for next year, Matt, I would love to know if you separated out mobile searches from web searches, what that looks like.
Yeah, you definitely see a lot more like local sort of stuff when you do the mobile searches, you know, and so there is a distinct difference between those types of queries.
It's also fun because you can go by country. You can see what the top searches in those categories are in all these different countries. And, of course, Norway, the top searches are very different. Netflix is number one because they got Netflix. So that's cool. but this is really fun. But now everybody's doing it. So Facebook has their 2012 and a special kind of a timeline. And so does Twitter. In fact, I think it was our friend Karen Wickery who did the the post on that. Let me see if I can do the Facebook one. I can't remember what was it. Facebook.com. There's Karen's blog post. And they made a video, too. And actually, they might have had the most iconic image of the year, which is President Obama hugging his wife. And that
if
was
you scroll down on that page, too, Leo, you also see that they have things like the most retweeted tweets.
Yeah. Actually, scroll down a little bit. Yeah.
Click the link there.
So you see, golden tweets. Go do the golden tweets, because the number one tweet of the year is four more years on the at Barack Obama account with that picture, which became, you know, famous. Justin Bieber, number two, R.I.P. Avalana, who was a young fan of his who passed away. we'll skip over that one. Yeah.
Sorry, I should have warned you.
No, I knew. I've actually looked at this. There was an NFL, a profane NFL tweet that actually was great. It was said, "Find me NFL, and I'll give them and pay the referees so they can come back," which I kind of liked. That was TJ, right? It's kind of fun to look at these, and I think this is a smart marketing tool for all three of these companies. Facebook did something a little different, though. Facebook made a timeline out of your stuff, which I think is kind of interesting.
Mm. Well, Twitter did something similar. They did a partnership with Visify, and you could do your year on Twitter.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. It's like the tab all the way to the right at that golden tweet site.
Do you want to do yours, Chad, or should I do mine? Let me do mine, because we don't know what
I've already done mine.
We don't know what Chad's been tweeting.
Yeah, right. it shows you have to import in. And have you done yours yet?
Oh, you have to import it in. Well, you better show yours because I haven't.
So I did the whole thing.
Ooh, that's cute.
So you get all sorts of stuff.
It'll show
like this is a Christmas holiday thing, and this is like your good tweet. These are words that I've tweeted.
Wow, look at that.
But you have a whole bunch of pages.
What's the number one word that you've tweeted? Can you tell?
Show. Looks like show.
Show's huge.
Show, pick.
But it's divided into it's a timeline, so it's over the months.
Yeah. You can also see I had an automated if this then that thing, which posted new episodes of my podcast. And so you can see these trends right here. But what Gina's talking about is year on Twitter, which is the last one. And so you can see my golden tweet, which was right after the SpaceX launch.
What makes it golden? Is it the most retweeted?
The most retweeted. And this was retweeted 20 times. And then my golden follower is actually the fellow who made the posters.
Martin.
Martin Anderson. And he's mentioned me 60 times this year.
Thank you, Martin.
Right. And then it sort of does that sort of words thing that was before. But
so where do I find that? I want to do that.
Just head on over to Visify, and then you can log in with LinkedIn. You can log in.
Oh, here it is. If you go to 2012.twitter.com.
Perfect.
It'll give you golden tweets, pulse of the planet, only on Twitter, trends, new voices, and then your year on Twitter. And so that's neat. Visify is a third party, right?
Right, right.
Yeah.
And so it does a lot of things. So like here's Foursquare check-ins on places that I've eaten. Dinner is my most recent check-in. I go to
You could have done this, Gina.
Airport.
Yep. This is beautiful.
Yeah. That's neat.
What's funny is that, you know, the Twitter API only goes back 3,000 tweets. So Anil, my partner, did this, and he, like, it went back to November.
Oh.
He tweets so much.
He's a heavy tweeter.
Yeah, he's a heavy tweeter.
For me, I'm only at 2,000. So it got everything.
Uh-huh. Okay, so it's just imported my tweets. My golden tweet, while we're watching the Mars landing. The first person who will walk on Mars is probably a high school student watching this right now. It was the Curiosity landing. Retweeted 986 times. And the TriCaster is my golden follower. Thank you, TriCaster. I say show a lot, too, apparently. This is cool. I don't know how many tweets. Where do you find out how many tweets it's synthesized here?
That's a good question.
Yeah, that's a good question.
I don't know if it's not really for, you know, settings and really diving in to analyze.
Right.
It's more of a visual representation. So it may not give you...
So if I click get more infographics, oh no, that makes me a Visify customer.
Right.
Right. So that's their little plug.
And mine says, uh-oh, Tweetaholic. Twitter lets us analyze your last 3,200 tweets, so we can only go back to January 2012. So I guess it took me back to January, but not quite all the way. My golden tweet was a tweet about a certain domain registrar.
I tweeted about that as well. Yeah.
Who supported SOPA and kills elephants.
And
objectifies women. So that tweet went far, apparently.
Not fond of him either. Yeah.
So my golden tweet says, every night, millions of players sit down to play the addictive, massively multi-online player game called Email.
This is good. This is a measure of your wittiness. What is yours, Jeff? Might as well.
I'm trying to do it. It's V-I-Z-I-F-Y, right?
No, just go to 2012.twitter.com.
Oh, okay.
2012.twitter.com. And then the last one is your tweets. It does take a little while to import. Okay. All of that. And then while we're doing that, let me see if I can find, what is it, facebook.com? Maybe it's /2012. Nope, that's some guy got that. Jason Rubenstein. Well done. He knew that someday it would be valuable to have that nickname.
The spammers are instantly grabbing 2013.
Yeah. Brilliant.
I believe it's facebook.com/my-year-in-status. You can look for...
That's easy to remember.
Yeah, super easy. Yeah. Thanks, Facebook. Just you're on Facebook.
You don't need the hyphens. No, this isn't it either.
Nope, not it. Darn.
Nope. I bookmarked it. Let me just check my pin board because I was so excited.
How could this be?
Maybe...
My golden is... This debate needs a halftime and an angry coach in the locker room.
That was the first debate, probably. You were saying somebody needs to spank President Obama, I think. Yeah. Facebook.
I don't know how many it got for me because it doesn't go back very far, I'll bet.
Yeah.
Considering that I'm a loud mouth.
Okay, so here it is. Nope.
The Facebook blog doesn't have anything on it.
I'm just Googling. Oh, here it is. Facebook.com/year-in-review. Uh-huh. Year in review. And so you get the year in review, and you can see the trends, memes, events, most listened to songs, movies. They got a lot of signals. This would be very interesting. I mean, still not maybe as many as Google, but this would be very interesting. What do you want? You want memes? What are the big memes in the U.S.? Number one, To Be Honest, TBH. Linsanity, Big Bird, SMH, Shaking My Head. So these are just like phrases, I guess. Huh. All right, I'll show you my... So then you click this to see your 2012 year in review. And I don't know how it's doing this, but I have a feeling this will do well. So instead of the year in review for everybody, who cares about that? We're a narcissistic generation. We want to know what's number one with us. And so what they do is they take your timeline and you go back and through great moments in your year.
Yeah, I mean, mine is just it's basically just a collage of pictures of my daughter.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that was my
As
year.
It should be.
Yeah.
As it should be. There's our Christmas card. There's me and my new boyfriend. There's Sarah Lane, my ex-girlfriend. Here we are in Norway. Yeah, it's cool. That's cool. I think that this is kind of this is spring.
Isn't that your timeline already anyway? It's just
yeah, it just seems like it's presented. I guess they surfaced the stuff that got the most responses.
Probably the most thumbs up or something.
Yeah,
like so it's kind of cool. I mean, it goes back in chronological order.
Yeah, yeah. Mine is heavily my daughter, and that was only like the last couple months, but I just got a lot of likes and stuff from family, so that makes sense.
Well, here's the first thing I posted in 2012. I had just gotten the car repaired. Yeah. It was back. Yeah, it was all clean and nicely done. Oh, geez. Oh, my goodness. So, I knew I'd get some use out of that someday. That's cool. I think it's fun that Twitter, Facebook, and following in Google's footsteps. I think Google did it first. And I'm just saying that because you're here, Matt.
I appreciate that. I noticed that in December, you know, a lot of the stories in the regular newspaper are like, yes, here's the top 10 right. trends or whatever. And it's like, yeah, everybody's going on vacation early. Yeah. So.
No, we're going to do that. We do our best ofs. In fact, this would be a good time to send you to twit.tv/best of. And we're so lazy, we ask you to tell us what the best moments were. We don't know. So go there and nominate your... We're going to do one for Twig, right, Chad?
Correct.
Yeah. Nominate your best moments for Twig. What I always did was the year behind and the year ahead. So like we do one day, Christmas week, you do the year, 2012, year in review. And then the next week, you do looking ahead to 2013. Because what else are you going to do? There's no news.
Yeah.
Nothing to talk about.
I think I'm going to channel Dvorak right now. I hate those lists.
I know. Well, everybody does. I'm sure the newspapers do. But what are you going to do? There's no news.
The predictions are fun. I do like reading what people predict about Apple's going to, beat Microsoft or all those sorts of things. That's a lot of fun.
That's what we should do.
Yeah, predictions are fun. I also like best music of the year because I'm old and don't keep up with new music. Ah. So I rely upon other people's lists of like best music of the year and be like, oh, I missed this. Oh. Although all of them have Call Me Maybe at the top. So I don't
know.
Maybe I'm
right
looking
on.
At the wrong list.
Right on. Great song.
I'm actually surprised that Call Me Maybe isn't number one on Facebook. It's We Are Young is first.
We Are Young.
Yeah. And then Somebody I Used to Know and then Call Me Maybe.
Is also, We Are Young that goes tonight.
Yeah, that one.
Yep. We Are Young.
And TBH, which is To Be Honest, which I've, TBH, haven't heard of before this.
Yeah.
Beat out YOLO? What's up with that?
YOLO crazy. Is, what is YOLO?
You only live
you
once.
You only live once.
That's a thing?
That's a thing.
It's so much of a thing, it has a backlash already.
It does.
You're kidding.
No, yeah, people
We've
are like,
missed
I
it
hate
all,
people that say
Grandpa,
YOLO.
It all.
And it's like, okay, but you do only live once, so.
Well, I like FOMO, fear of missing out, but I didn't know about YOLO and oh no. So, golly, I feel, so is that means that happened a lot in status updates?
That has to be what it means, yeah. That those words occurred the most in status updates.
The biggest memes, and apparently a dog with a collar on it is big.
All right, here's a challenge, Leo. Can we start a meme so next year it gets on the biggest memes list?
Shouldn't be too hard. If TBH got number one,
yeah, come on.
I always liked POS. Oh, I see. POS stands for parents over shoulder. By the way, not what you think. YOLO, LOL, JK. I am a cat.
Because they live nine times, you know.
Right.
Oh,
wow.
Oh, my God. These are all the YOLOs.
Yeah. They're maybe,
holy YOLO.
Yeah.
What does this say, Chad?
This is Know Your Meme.
All right. Excellent.
Know Your Meme.
Thank God for Know Your Meme.
Yeah, seriously.
I wouldn't know. So most listened to songs, you just said that. Okay. That's We Are Young. Somebody That I Used to Know. I liked that. Call Me Maybe.
Yeah.
What Makes You Beautiful by One Direction. I never even heard of One Direction until
You are way too old.
I guess so.
Well.
It was the ads. It was the Pepsi ad that Payphone by Maroon 5. Kanye West. And look at, though, how big compared to the other ones We Are Young is. Got a big wedge. I love this stuff. Okay. You want to guess what movie? Or is it movies?
Hunger Games,
right.
Avengers was number two. Magic Mike. Oh, God, it was so bad.
You know, I was shocked. It got on the New Yorker's top 10 movie lists of the year.
What?
What?
For the Magic abs? Mike? I mean, what? Oh,
I think it was for the abs. Trolling. I think it was. I don't want
I don't know if that's if Twilight or that is more depressing. What's more depressing?
So on Netflix, I've just started rewatching my favorite movies. So Idiocracy,
Good
Office
movie.
Space,
good movie.
You know,
you're a Mike Judge fan. The Mike Judge Film Festival?
Yeah. Instead of doing the new stuff, you're just like, well, why not just go back and watch a classic, Princess Pride, LA
Princess
Story.
Pride. That's good. All right, so there you go. The year is over. And so is this year in review. Thank you very much. I want to talk about your op-ed about privacy, Gina, in just
Let's
a little bit.
Okay.
And also, Marissa Meyer starting to make her presence felt at Yahoo already. Some big upgrades. In fact, the biggest upgrade that everybody thought should be upgraded might be the one to talk about, Flickr. And then we'll ask Matt Cutts where that $10 billion is. He knows what I'm talking about. It's in Bermuda. I don't know if I can get angry about that, frankly. I mean, if I had $10 billion to hide in a tax haven, I would hide it.
I can join in on that conversation, too, because the UK is just being, I think, ridiculous.
Yeah.
In demanding that you basically volunteer money when the problem is the law.
Right. Please give us some money, because just to be a nice person. But we will be back. And Google and Apple teaming up, finally. It's about time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Peace in the kingdom.
Peace in the kingdom. Lying down together. But first, a word from Ford and the fabulous Ford Autonomous Vehicle Program, because that's what it's starting to look like. Google may have actual autonomous vehicles with hundreds of thousands of miles on the road, but look what Ford's doing. Sneaky, these guys. In fact, I'm going to talk to Alan Mulally, the CEO of Ford, at CES again this year, and I'm going to put him on the spot and say, Alan, every year I say, are you working on autonomous vehicles? And every year Ford says, Alan says, Leo, people love to drive. But I'll tell you what I learned in my many years at Boeing designing cockpits for planes like the 777, that it's you need a pilot. You need a guy, you know, at the wheel or the yoke or the joystick. But you can have these systems, these autonomous systems, help them be better. And that's exactly what Ford is doing with things like we talked about the adaptive cruise control, right? And we talked about the lane assist. Now, what about Bliss? This is something really cool. The blind spot information system, BLIS. Watch this. Sensors in the vehicle's rear quarter panels are scanning blind spots in traffic. If another vehicle's in your blind spot, you'll see audible and visual alerts. So you know this thing where you can see them, but then they disappear for a while in the mirror. It also enables a feature called the cross traffic alert that warns you of oncoming traffic when you're backing out of a parking space. And I had that the other day, and it was so cool. I had two big, you need it nowadays with trucks and SUVs. Everybody's got giant cars, and I'm driving the Fusion, and I'm backing up, and it says, there's somebody coming. You can't see him. It's kind of, it looks around the corner and knows when there's oncoming traffic. Even when you can't see, it can. Awesome. Just a great tool. Now, I've also used the Active Park Assist. Now, this did not work out so well for me. But it's not Ford's fault. It was my fault. So the idea, why is your show that? Do you have the video? Check, because it's really cool. So you're driving along and you want to park. You press a button. I was in a Ford Flex. We did this on the test track. I think they kind of knew Leo was an idiot. And you press a button, and as you drive along, and it measures the spaces as you drive by them. And when you go by a space that's big enough, it says, oh, I see a spot. Literally. And then space found. Then it says pull forward. You pull forward. You press the button to do the active park assist. Now, here's the thing. Keep your feet on the brake and the accelerator like it says to. I just lifted my hands and feet off the wheel. Now, this does do everything, right? But the car is still in gear. So I parked. I thought, wow, that's amazing. And then I kept my foot on the accelerator and backed into the car behind me. There were a bunch of engineers in the car behind me laughing uproariously. It was so embarrassing. But it is amazing. The truth is, my mind was blown. Because
What did you do? Hit a Chevrolet?
Yeah, no. It was a Fiesta or something. They had it on the test track. What they did, they set the whole thing. It was so cool. It was amazing because you push the button and the wheel starts going zzz, and you know how hard it is to parallel park. You're supposed to look and you would do the thing and it's all geometry. It does it. It just zzz, and it parks itself. It is the first experience I ever had of a car driving itself. And I think I was just so flabbergasted. It was amazing. It's really, really cool. Have you ridden in the Google Autonomous car? You must have, Matt.
I have not. You know, through a coincidence and a series of bad luck, I've had two or three chances, and each time I'm like, ooh, I'm the last guy in the line who doesn't get to ride or something.
Strings. Oh, I'd love to do that. Well, next best thing, the 2013 Ford Fusion and the 2013 Ford Taurus, both of which have available Bliss and Active Park Assist. You could find out more and look at the videos and all of that stuff. Ford.com/technology. It is really, really neat stuff. And, yeah, I'm happy to say that I will be interviewing Alan Mulally and Paul Macarena. Alan, of course, CEO of Ford, Paul is the CTO of Ford at CES this year. We'll get those interviews up on the network too. So, in fact, if you've got questions you'd like to ask, I'd love to hear them, and I'll be on the Ford stage. I think that's the first day of CES, Tuesday. Thanks to the folks at Stitcher who are setting this all up for us, and thanks to Ford for their support of This Week in Google. So, Gina, is this your first time writing for the New York Times?
It is.
Cool.
Yeah. Thank you.
So,
that was exciting.
This is in the Room for Debate section of the opinion pages, and it was about privacy. And so, there were a bunch of people. There's Ed Felton from Princeton, somebody from Pinboard, from the Cato Institute, from the EFF. Mm-hmm. Vivian Redding, we've talked about before, is on the
Vivian Redding, yeah.
Yeah, she's on the EC's, the European Commission, and has been she's the one who wants the right to be forgotten, right?
Right to be forgotten. She has the four pillars of privacy that I've gone on about the show.
So she would be the privacy hawk in there. So what did you say, Gina, in there?
Well, the question was about whether or not when we use apps, we should just face the fact that we're relinquishing our privacy, right? And the question was hooked on this new FTC study, a report that just came out this week that basically showed that alarming percentages of apps, like 60% of apps that children use, is actually a report about children's apps, secretly transmit data about usage data without letting parents know without user consent. So things like telephone number, device ID, tracking information, you know, for apps or games, say, for example, that have advertising in them, you know, that transmit information about usage across various apps. So this FTC report comes out. It sounds like lots of apps in the Google Play Store and the iTunes Store are transmitting information without consent, questioning whether or not that this violates COPPA, which is a Children's Online Privacy Protection Act. And then the Times kind of rolled this up and said, well, children or adults, no matter what, web or mobile, should we just face the fact that we just don't have, you know, you were relinquishing our privacy just by using technology? Which, of course, is a totally loaded question and, like, terrible way to frame it. It's not a binary thing, right? So I wrote a piece. It's just a sort of a mini op-ed. But what I was saying, and I was trying to channel Jarvis here, especially in the second graph, but I was saying that, you know, that basically that sharing information isn't necessarily relinquishing your privacy, that it's not a black and white, right? And that we share information when we use our credit card in a restaurant, when we use the Easy Pass at the toll booth. That was sort of a Northeast reference. And that we share information in order to partake in this kind of speed and convenience of certain services. And that the problem isn't the sharing of information or the data transmission. The problem is the secretiveness. And this is an argument that I've made here on the show a bunch of times, is that apps should disclose what kind of information they're gathering, collecting, transmitting, why they need that information. So I talked about how Path earlier this year, that a developer outed Path for transmitting people's address books, the contents of their address book from their iPhone, and storing it on their servers on their side without letting users know. And that, you know, they kind of, there was an uproar. People pointed out they were doing this, and it kind of came out that this was kind of a standard, you know, a thing that a lot of different iOS apps did. And in response to the uproar, Path changed the behavior of the app and asked for permission with the ability to opt out. And Apple added an address book permissions prompt into iOS 6. And I think that this is how we're evolving at the moment, right? Like, we're still really early in the kind of smartphone, particularly with smartphones, era. And I think we need to figure out, you know, what kind of behaviors are okay. What's the best user experience for these permissions? We've talked about on the show here. We don't want to recreate Windows Vista, you know, where every single thing that you do, you get a permissions prompt. But there's a happy medium. So that was kind of the gist of my take on it, that, you know, I'm an app developer and I'm a mom and I'm concerned about privacy. But I also understand, you know, that sharing information makes for better experiences.
It's really, really well done, Gina.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, I'm tough on privacy things, but I couldn't have said it better myself, and which I hope is a compliment. And you know, the beauty of it was that you share the concerns, you endorse working in ways to preserve our privacy in those concerns, but you also just are plain out rational and say that this stuff has a good end to it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I pointed out, like, Google's dashboard, which lists all your products and all the data that it stores, and kind of like how we want to encourage that kind of transparency about what apps are storing, why they're storing it. And I use the example, you know, and I don't know if this is still true, Pandora, but there was a point at which I installed Pandora on my phone and it asked for access to my address book. And I was just like, I couldn't fathom.
Yeah, why would you need that? Yeah.
Streaming app need access to my address book. And it turns out that they just haven't ever share this playlist with your contacts function. But it didn't, but I didn't know that. I couldn't tell that. And it made me suspicious. And I actually think that you should have a healthy skepticism about it. I think you should question, why do you need access to this or that? And I think our permissions models could be a little better, you know, for in the case of Pandora, for example, the app's not going to work if it can't access the internet connection. And that's obvious, right? The music streaming app, it needs the internet connection. But the app should be able to work maybe without that easily share my playlist. I mean, users should be able to sort of selectively opt out of giving apps certain permissions. So I actually think, and I didn't say this in the piece, I think Android's a lot farther along with this. And it kind of always has been than iOS. Android's always had sort of a list of detailed permissions that every app needs. If you look at any app in the Play Store, you can see that. And Google in general, I think, has been, and I'm not trying to kiss up because Matt's here.
I'll go the extra mile and actually give some kudos to Windows Phone 8 because they have, I think, a Kids Corner feature where you can say, okay, designate apps that are safe for your kid. And then it's, I think, I haven't used Windows Phone 8, but it's like locked down so you can give it to the child and know that they're only going to be using the apps that you said are okay. And that seems like another great way to, you know, you don't want a kid randomly pressing the buttons on your phone anyway. And so, you know, there's a lot of different ways you could try to think about putting the power in the hands of the parents and then trusting the parents to do what they think is best.
Well, but the problem with some, well, like copyright legislation is that what it says is that the parent, let's say an educational app wants to do geography and starting from the town where you live, the parent is required to fax, scan, or video call with the company to allow that. And, you know, what happens is you're not going to do that. Whereas that's a very simple thing. The parent knows what's going on. The control is local, and it changes it around. Makes it easier.
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge challenge to get this permissions thing right. I mean, I worry about this stuff. I think about this stuff. And I blow through the, like, yeah, allow, next screens myself during, you know, when I'm installing apps. I think part of it is the onus is on companies and app developers to explain what's happening in very brief, very clear language. But also the onus is on the user to kind of look and see, what does this need access to? And then thing. So we have to write better terms of service and privacy policies. You know, they can't be these long tomes and legalese. They have to be clear and brief. But at the same time, like, I want to teach my kid, and hopefully things will be a lot farther along by the time she starts using these new platforms. You know, to think about the difference between, you know, I think there's like a spectrum of sharing information, right? There's like sharing your email address. That's one thing. Sharing photos is another thing. Sharing your location, that's another thing. And then there's sharing your social security number. You know, and that's a huge spectrum, you know, from one end to another. You know, under very few circumstances should she ever share her social security number, for example. But under many, she would share an email address. So I hope that I think that the experiences for these things will get better. It's a challenge, though. It's a UX challenge.
Yep.
This is actually, I recommend people read the entire section and all the different debaters. Some nice viewpoints. I mean, Gina, you're certainly the kind of the moderate in the bunch. You got Vivian Redding saying it's all up to the good laws. And then, I hate to admit it, but agree with Jim Harper of the Cato Institute, who says just get over it. And then his coda is that the children who take the lead in the information society will be the ones who learn from a young age how to live in it. It's that moral panic again. What about the children?
Exactly. Yeah. It's the effort to regulate the technology rather than the use, rather than the behavior.
Yeah.
I spoke at LexisNexis last week when I was down in Florida. And, you know, this is the side of it that uses data for things like insurance and risk and all that. One thing they said that I had no idea is that there's a national death registry. Mm-hmm. And there's an effort to stop any use of that. You're dead. The fact that you're dead is not privacy anymore, right? But that's how far this has gone now. No, you can't know that.
Well,
she'll be alive.
There are some interesting loopholes, though. So there's an actual file that's when you die, you can buy a file from the government that lists what your social security number was. And that by itself might not be private, but by looking at when people die and what their social security number was, things were sort of allocated in sequential order. And right. So you're able to guess the social security number of people who are alive. And I can neither confirm nor deny that I, like, have... went around and found a copy of that file just to play with it and see what sort of stuff you could do. It's pretty fascinating how sometimes you have unintended consequences. Yes. But I completely agree with your larger point, Jeff, that people often get a little too worried about it. You know, it's almost like there's an industry, as you've said, to sort of make privacy scares a thing.
Well, and now it's not just technology. It is, and you had the book last week.
That's a great book, isn't it?
The notion of big data, Rick Smolin's book, which is very, very good, very, very huge, big like big data. But the phrase big data has become as freighted as anything with this fear, the techno panic.
Yeah,
and I think we got to get off that. It's knowledge, right? At some point, it's merely knowledge. And I was at something. I was at an Economist event, and I'm growling and tweeted that when books came out, that was big data.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Oh yep. My God! Look at all this stuff. It was big data. It's just knowledge. That's all it is.
Yahoo has upgraded Flickr for iOS. Flickr for Android was updated similarly a couple of months ago. Yahoo Mail has been significantly updated. It looks like Marissa Meyer's starting to get some traction over at Yahoo. Any thoughts on the new Yahoo Mail?
You going to switch your mail to Yahoo?
No.
I actually, I have family members who use Yahoo Mail as their email address. I'm going to ask about this, about the app. I've been using Flickr actually quite a bit since my daughter was born, just because I really like the tool and I like kind of spreading the love across different service providers. So I'm really excited about this iPhone app upgrade. I mean, honestly, Flickr's been kind of, in my community, really just been like this tumbleweed blowing through. It just hasn't been a lot of people there. But I like the way that you can set up guest passes and that there's friends and family sharing. I like the privacy settings and Flickr. But the iPhone app update is amazing. It's awesome.
Do you think that part of her strategy, Marissa's strategy, was knowing how much geeks respect Flickr and care about it and didn't like the fact that it was orphaned, that it was a smart place to go? Or was it her Instagram more consumer thing?
I mean, I think, so what was it? It was like DearMarissaMeyer.com was like the first kind of website when she got hired. CEO was like, please save Flickr. And then she I think for one of the first things she did was assign a few employees to the Flickr team. So yeah, I mean, I think this is, I like to think that she just knows that this is a beloved app that's sort of gotten dusty over the years and watching what happened with Instagram. And interestingly, Flickr also just added support for Twitter cards in this update, right? So as Instagram pulls back and says, no, you can't, embed our photos onto Twitter, Flickr's going the other way and saying yes.
So did Pinterest. Pinterest just did the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
They're stepping in where angels fear to tread.
But my inbox was overrun today with contact requests from Flickr because there's a Find My Friends function. Uh-oh. iOS app that uses your Twitter contacts and your Facebook. So I wonder if there was some conversation between Flickr and Twitter where Twitter's like, look, if you enable cards, we'll let you access our social graph. Or if there was no conversation at all and hopefully, hopefully we won't see the story where Twitter says, well, we're going to cut off the social graph access. But hopefully that won't happen.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, just go the other way from Instagram. Yeah.
The mail thing is interesting because I got enraged a couple of years ago. I had a Yahoo account and then they just killed it and there was stuff in there. Yeah, I hadn't used it. Sorry, because it wasn't very good. And it was dusty and it was just dead. And I complained about that, as I tend to do on Twitter. And lots of other people complain about the same thing. And to this day, I wrote a blog post about it. And I still get somebody who comes in cursing Yahoo Mail. Well, all right, let's assume Marissa's going to get over that kind of idiocy. And she has real vision. You know, we talked about the show about the hyper-personal news stream, the idea of services and tools and mail. I'm going to bet that maybe not this version, but in the long run, she's going to do a spectacular job with it. But I just keep on thinking that horse has left the barn and is over the horizon.
Well, that's the problem. I mean, I have a Yahoo Mail account, but I'm not going to switch to it because I've already invested in Gmail, right?
So, I've invested to the point of hundreds of dollars.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, and there's this this tweet by Ryan Sarver, who's the director of platform at Twitter, who says, "I know ex-Flickr people everywhere are cursing today. That's the app we always wanted to ship."
Right.
So and so in some sense, if Marissa is letting the core engineers get to the guts of what they've always wanted to do and freeing up the resources to do that, I've always been bullish on Marissa. At Yahoo, and I think if this is part of her first initiatives, I think it's a great first step to be taking. So.
You're never going to tell me the truth on this, but I'm going to ask anyway. You all rooting for Marissa? I mean, are people looking across town and going, "You go, girl," or what? I mean, you obviously know her well.
Yeah, I would say I can't speak for Google as a whole, but I would say the people that I know are rooting for Marissa, in part because everybody at Google knows it's in our enlightened self-interest to have strong competition. And so if we have, Flickr and Instagram and Snapseed on Google's side and people are all, competing, then the company that's the most proprietary, the most closed, the least letting you have your data.
Who would that be, Matt?
Or just in general doesn't treat you well for whatever reason, doesn't let you have the best filters or whatever. So I think that's what's good for users, and that's going to force everybody else to do a good job and compete on the merits. And that's exactly what we should want.
And I think you're right, Gina. Everybody's rooting for Flickr because we all love Flickr, right? That was the first.
It's such a great product. And I know people in our community are kind of felt icky about the Facebook acquisition and Instagram. So yeah. I'm hoping that this is all of my friends go back to using Flickr. I hope this is the tipping thing. I have a Flickr Pro account. I still have it. I renew it every year. It's like $25. Totally worth it.
I let mine lapse for the first time in years.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'm not alone.
You know what I've done though?
What?
I've gone to automatic upload on my devices now, and so I'm using Google Plus Photos.
Yes. You know what's interesting about automatic upload is Facebook's doing it now too. Did you notice that?
Mm-hmm.
They just turned it on. So now on my iPhone, for instance, every picture I take is uploaded to Apple, Facebook, and Google. And we're worried about privacy?
You didn't start up Dropbox?
Oh yeah, Dropbox. I forgot. Dropbox too. It's like I will never lose a picture.
Redundant cloud backup.
I don't think the Flickr app on Android doesn't have that feature yet, but I wouldn't be surprised if they turned it on. Let's see.
And it added filters as well on.
They have filters, yeah.
I'm
so sick of filters.
No, but I think it's consensus is that filters are what made Instagram succeed, right?
Yeah, that's
because you feel like an artist with every picture you take, however crappy.
The journalists get very haughty about it.
Oh, you must have used filters.
No. It's not that. That you're faking news and history. You're ruining the record.
I don't think a sepia tone is ruining the record. But maybe. Here.
I don't know.
I don't trust my cell phone camera to have the perfect representation of lighting and.
I agree.
So this is the Flickr app on Android, which I think is actually they predated the Flickr app. Oh, we don't have that over the shoulder.
I do, but
it's over there. Why did all the cameras get moved?
It was moved for All About Android.
Okay, there we go. I'm going to reach over here.
Thanks for doing that one, Leo.
This is the new stretch. So it does have that kind of Instagram-y feel with the filters down here. But the filters are named after cities. So there's Tokyo. New York City's in black and white. Gina, you want to explain that? Or actually, Jeff is
Woody Allen.
Yeah, Woody Allen. It's the Woody Allen filter. Actually, it doesn't seem to be doing anything. Oh, there it is. And Berlin. What is Berlin? You know what? This is a lot slower than Instagram. They're going to have to work on that. Paris.
I'm getting phone envy again, Leo.
Yeah, isn't that a big phone? Boy, did you notice how big my phone is?
I almost bought one last week, and I'm...
It's so big.
You know, they're not named after cities on iOS.
Oh, that's interesting. What are they named after?
They're named after animals. Panda, mammoth, chameleon, wallaby, iguana.
Filter.
Like that makes any sense at all.
Toucan.
Toucan.
Well, panda turned it black and white. That would make sense.
Yeah, no, panda must turn it black and white. Toucan must turn it into a rainbow of colors.
Yes. Panda is black and white.
Yeah.
As is wallaby. Narwhal.
On the filters talk, I didn't put this in the doc, but Snapseed was re-released by Google for Android and iOS for free.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. I just downloaded it on all three,
But again, you'd think, well, why don't you just integrate that into the Google Plus app?
Well, so it's you funny, can share, and it's...
Because Twitter has Aviary now in its app, right? So Aviary...
They didn't say it came from Google. They said it came from Nick Software when you downloaded it.
Good. Thank God they're keeping it alive. I hope they keep the desktop plugins alive. That was my biggest concern. You use those,
Yeah, my wife is hooked on them. She's been playing with effects. The HDR mode and, and a lot of the different stuff. Like, you know, these guys have been around for a long time. And yeah, if you haven't played with Snapseed, I can actually see Jeff's point about, you know, history and whether you're doing it accurately, because you can very easily click on a seed point of the sky and make it more or less blue and, like, change the gradient very quickly.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, you would never know that that was not the real sky, but it just looks more dramatic. And so I can actually see where there'd be some concern about, you know, is that what was really happening, or did you filter it up a little bit?
But I think those of us, and I'm sure your wife too, who know Nick, loves Snapseed. It's an app, and then Nick makes these desktop plugins for Aperture and Lightroom that are spectacular, and we would all just suffer without. So I do hope Google does what they can to keep HDR effects and color effects and Viveza and Silver effects and Sharpener and Define alive.
I'll keep lobbying.
Would you please?
It's great software. Yeah, you want that to be available.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's pretty obvious Google bought it for Snapseed. So that's what worries. I think it's where it worries a lot of pros. It's like, ugh. Of course, if they open sourced all that stuff, that wouldn't be so bad.
That would be pretty cool.
That'd be really cool.
Make it like, nice. Like when we bought the video codec and made that open source.
Yeah, WebM, yeah.
I think that would be really cool. But I don't know what the plans are, so.
No. You're not speaking for Google.
You need to have a lower third for Matt that just pops up and says, I'm not speaking for Google. That way you can save yourself the effort. It just
Yes. Please don't fire me.
I have no idea. Larry Page did an interview with Miguel Helft at Fortune. He does speak for Google. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But I think this would be a good time for the changelog. We don't want to get through the whole show like we did that other time and not have the trumpets. So, if you will.
The Google changelog.
We're so easily amused.
Gina Trapani has the newest new stuff on Google.
The big launch, it was actually last week, after we did the show last week, was Google Plus Communities.
Yeah.
Have you guys played with this?
Yeah.
Go ahead. It's a way to set up a group of Google Plus users around a topic, right? So you could have a Twig community, you could have a photography community or a food community. And so you probably, both of you or all three of you probably got inundated with invites to all sorts of communities. And I'm actually still playing around with this, but you could join a community and you could do posts on a certain topic just to people in that community, and they're public and private. And you can sort of have conversations about particular topics that you like. I think I've joined a... is there a Twit community? I think there
yes,
is.
There is.
You were showing up. There is. I have to join. And yeah, it's pretty cool. Have you guys played around with it? Are there any communities that are really hopping that we should join?
Well, there's This Is Sparta, Mike Elkin's community for people who love Greece.
Zeus did it.
Yeah, so I did This Is Twit because I said, well, what the hell? And actually, Jeff, you were asking whether we should do a Twig community. And I think what I'm going to do with Twit is... we'll have a Twit community. I also have a Tech Guy community, but we'll let each show create its own community. Why not? Right?
Yay.
So there should be a Twig community, and I won't keep hands off. If you want to do it, go ahead. But what's nice is you can add moderators. So for instance, the Twit community, pretty much everybody who wants to, including I think you guys, are moderators there.
I don't know if I got elevated.
It's a pain to elevate because you have to go through members, and now we already have 1,640 members, so I have to go through them one by one and add moderators. But most of the hosts are moderators.
Chad, should you start the group?
Twig group? I think Jeff should. It doesn't matter. It's just whoever owns it.
Okay. All right, I'll start it.
That way you can never be fired.
Aha!
Right. You have the keys to the group.
It's just like being a professor. I have
tenure. Tenure to Jeff Jarvis. My reaction to, and then we'll go on with changelog. But just my reaction to Google Plus communities is this Google Plus was kind of dribbling off. None of my friends were there, and a lot of photographers. I mean, there's activity there, but it wasn't gripping the road. Google Plus communities is awesome, and may be exactly the feature to me that could turn around Google Plus and make it a really valuable place. As Google Groups, which I used for a long time, have kind of gotten less interesting, this community takes over.
I was considering changing a Google group that I run to a community.
Is that easy, is there a way to transfer it over? Probably not.
I don't believe there's a way to migrate it. I was thinking about just starting fresh and saying to everyone, hey, just do this.
I get you've got invitation, you know, events is built into it. It's got the ability to have different, discussion groups within the group itself.
Mm-hmm.
The notifications, of course, are perfection. This is a selfie group. I think I'll join that. anything that's self, I'm all about.
There's an internal group at Google dedicated to Tesla, and I joined that, and it's incredibly addictive. And I'm like, must not buy Tesla. You know?
Yeah, that's the upshot
really
of that.
Expensive community to join.
Yeah, no
that
kidding.
Is an expensive community. So it looks like inside the This Is Twit group, there are discussions set up for each show.
I set up some discussions, they did. Somebody made discussions for the shows. Interesting.
I get a group right now.
So, but I think each show should have its own discussion because otherwise this will get unwieldy fast. And
yeah,
that
absolutely is
the one negative on Google Groups. A very, very active group would kind of swamp you with content.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Chad, can you send me a larger version of our logo?
Yeah. Get on that.
Yes.
I don't have it here, so it might be.
Oh, whatever.
Yeah, what I did with the Team Tech Guys used the album art, which is probably the most recognizable graphic to go with a community. Do you know what the biggest community is right now? Do we know? We can't sort by size, so.
Maybe photography. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I wouldn't
but
be
there
surprised.
There are a lot of photographers.
I wouldn't be surprised.
16,000 makers, hackers, artists, and engineers. 19,000 space. There's some big communities. 12,000 Star Wars members. So there's some big communities. It's funny because it's so social is so interesting. You could just the one right feature could flip the whole thing on its head.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
the one wrong feature, as MySpace learned, can kill you.
Well, in the Larry Page interview, I think it was in there that it was the first time I've heard Larry and Eric kind of position themselves against Facebook.
Yeah, we'll get to that. But let's continue with. Let's continue with the change log because I don't want to get sidetracked. But I did want to talk about communities because I think it's big.
Mm-hmm.
It's
a huge story. It's really the biggest launch of the week.
Oh yeah.
A few other little things. Well, we talked about the YouTube redesign earlier with Lamar. Google Apps, a change to Google Apps, no longer available for free. So there used to be a free sign up for individuals. Now it's the business version only. So people who already have a free Google Apps account, they will continue, but there are just new member signups for the free package. So basically you have to sign up for a business account, which I believe is $50 per user per year,
mm-hmm.
Includes phone support and all that other stuff. I'm a big Google Apps user. One of the reasons why I really like Google Apps is you can associate your domain name with it. So if I wanted to change email providers, if I had some crazy day where I wanted to switch to Yahoo Mail or some other email provider, I could do that because my email address doesn't change. But I guess, Matt, it looks like you added a link in here. There's a little hack to still sign up for Google Apps.
Oh, quick. Tell me how.
It's on Digital Inspiration. It looks like you have to sign up with App Engine. I actually haven't tried this out, but it's on labnol.org.
So this is one of these things where I hope it's not a firing Matt occasion. But So as I understand it, Google App Engine needs to authenticate. So if you want to run your app on, on some other domain or something like that, you actually right now need to authenticate using Google Apps. And so if they were charging for Google Apps, then you wouldn't be able to use Google App Engine on some other domain for free. And so there's this write-up that basically talks about if you go in via Google App Engine, because it actually checks your referrer, then you can still sign up. Now, you don't get 10 people for free. I think you get one account on a domain for free. I actually hadn't set it up on any of my Google Apps on any of my domains because I usually just use a Gmail for my personal stuff. But I tried it, and as of like Sunday, it worked. I don't know whether it'll stay up. I don't know if eventually App Engine will say, okay, you don't have to authenticate with Google Apps. So if you do want to try this, you might want to try it right now because I don't know.
Try it soon.
What the lifespan will be on this particular method. So.
quickly
doing
this. And,
you know, I should say, just as a Google Apps user forever, you know, there are times when Google Apps users don't get features as quickly as regular kind of vanilla Google account users. And there's plenty of ways. If you just want a custom email address, like, there are plenty of ways to do that with regular Gmail. You don't need a Google Apps account to set your, you know, your from, your sent address or to get your mail from another provider. I mean, Gmail has tons of those tools built in and just, you know, your free Google account. So it's not that big a deal, but something to note. Let's see, what else do we have? Oh, Google launched a new Chrome extension called Save to Drive. It makes it easy to save an image or page, a web page, HTML or a web archive, which is a .mht file. That was a new one on me, to Google Drive. So you install the extension, you can right click, and you can save things directly to Drive. And a couple of new ways to work with images as well. You can zoom by scrolling, or you can leave a comment about a specific part of an image that you've saved in Drive, or leave comments on the side. Pretty cool.
Gina, question on Drive. Quick question.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm an idiot. There's no folders or tags there, is there?
In Drive itself?
In Drive itself.
Yeah, there are folders. There are folders,
there's folders
in Drive.
But no tags. No tags.
No tags. correct me if I'm wrong, Matt. I'm pretty sure that they're just folders.
That's a really good question. I think that it's just folders. It's kind of like in Gmail, you can have labels, so you can recreate both folders and tags. The impression I have is that in Drive, it's usually going on a folder model rather than a tag model.
Mm-hmm. I was getting to like the Evernote model with tags.
Mm-hmm.
That's good feedback. I'll actually pass that on to the people.
This is the great thing about having Matt on the show.
Well,
like a broadcast news moment. It goes from my mouth into his ear, into the computers around the world. It's a great thing.
Well, and you were talking about your Chromebook and losing some data from Evernote because of the way Evernote wasn't like locally saving or wasn't right. Refreshing data. And so that's like one of those things where it's like, okay, is there stuff we can do to like help make that a little bit better? So that's good feedback. You know, tags would be helpful there.
Yeah, I think I've been in connection with, is it Rick Beyer? Rick, mm-hmm. Somebody from the Chrome team. It was great. He reached out to me and I made some suggestions and he put in some bug reports and I'm still using it.
Yay! Did you see some of them are dropping down to $99?
Well, for schools through Donors Choose. Donors Choose is a great organization where teachers can come in and ask for things. And so until I think December 20 something, you could go find a school, find a teacher who wants it, and you can pay $99 and get a Chromebook into a school.
So a $100 laptop. Didn't mean to hijack the...
No, it's great.
Yeah, it's great. It's huge. I have one last changelog item, and this is something Jeff found. This is pretty interesting. The Google's search results, it's called the knowledge graph, right? That sidebar now lists side effects and information about drugs. So if you search for, say, acetaminophen in Google, you'll get one of those panels on the right side.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And actually, not only side effects, lots of different information about whether or not to over the counter.
My heart drug is Rivmal. And if you look at that, you'll find that it's a really useful list of things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And be careful with acetaminophen because it'll kill you. Right? Seriously.
And that's all I got.
Another story for another day. No, it's easy to overdose on acetaminophen.
Mm.
And it's in a lot of stuff. It probably says that right there. Very, very. I think they should ban it. But anyway, and I just signed up for a Google app for free, so that's cool.
Nice.
Just wanted to do it before they turned that back door off.
Get grandfathered in there.
It looks like that search trick works if you search for the brand as well. So if you search for Tylenol, it'll give you the information about acetaminophen. If you search for Advil, you get the.
That's what I just did. You can see it was only Tylenol.
So the possible side effects lists are lovely.
Actually, I know a young woman who died from acetaminophen overdose.
Oh,
it's very easy to do. It was an accidental overdose because it's in a lot of stuff that you don't know.
Yep.
And it has a very low toxicity.
Yep.
Wow. So don't mess with it.
On that note.
Bad for your liver.
Yeah.
Seriously. I don't know why it's, well, that's another.
Oh.
That's sad. And that's your change log and Tylenol warning. Moving along, Larry Page sat down last month with Miguel. It's Page's second big interview since his ascendancy to CEO. 70-minute conversation. And do you guys want to pick out some highlights on here?
There was some good stuff in there.
They asked, what else would you change in a world with self-driving cars? Would we not have streetlights? Would the cities be different? Do you have a vision for what could happen? He says, it's hard to predict. I think, you know, one of the issues we face here is parking. The cost for a parking structure is about $40,000 a space. Google's actually faced with this, right? It's all concrete and steel. Do you really want to use all your concrete and steel to build parking lots? Seems pretty stupid. If we had automated cars or even some fraction of them, we'd save hundreds of millions of dollars on parking garages.
Just at Google.
Just at Google. That's kind of amazing. When you get to scale, things change.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Go ahead.
He had one part that was pretty good about one of his challenges is to try to keep people thinking about how do you think big? How do you be ambitious? And, you know, that's something he cares about is, you know, what are the big, hairy, ambitious goals that Google should be tackling in the next year or the next 5 years? And I think the way that he said it in the past is, you know, the easiest thing to do when you come in the morning is the thing that you did yesterday. But that's not always the best thing that you should do for the company or for the world.
Right.
And that's, you know, that sticks in your mind a little bit. Instead of just getting locked into blinders of I'm going to do things this way or I'm going to do things that way. How do you come at it and try to come up with a different approach or something more ambitious? Because his point is always that people don't try the ambitious stuff.
He talks about competition, and Miguel, to his credit, just will not let it go. Miguel starts, in the old world of desktop search, your main competitors at the time were Yahoo and Microsoft. Is the competition now something totally different? Is it Siri? Is it Amazon for commercial queries? Larry says, I don't really think about it that way. Because you don't think about the competition? Obviously, we think about the competition to some extent, but I feel my job is mostly getting people not to think about our competition, which I think is the right thing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the question is, what would an ideal search engine do? Or if you had all this technology, what would you do? Not just like, what did the last person do?
Right.
Or what does your competitor do?
The last thing you should do is be reactive in that way. He says, Apple's still a partner. This is Miguel. It's a competitor. You and Steve Jobs are friendly. Larry says, at times. I like that. You said he said something about, for the first time, that both Eric and Larry kind of admitted to competing with Facebook, Jeff?
No, that was in other things, I think. Or maybe it was Larry was in other things, but I think I've seen that.
Yeah. He says, we talk to Apple. We have a big search relationship with Apple and so on, so we talk to them and so on. He says that Google Plus is a big bet. Actually, Miguel said that, and he agreed. I think it's gone pretty well. I'm pretty happy if users of Plus are happy and the numbers are growing because that means we're onto something. We've got a huge team actually in this building. If you walk around, you see everyone's excited and running around and working hard on it. Well, that's nice.
He said he's never satisfied. That's his personality and his job.
Shouldn't be. Mm-hmm. Yep. And that's the difference between me and Larry Page because I'm completely satisfied. I'm very happy.
He's a content man.
Yeah, I'm content. You know, it's a worthwhile interview. I'm not sure. You know, any good CEO, actually, Larry did this very well. Any good CEO is not going to say anything of material, but he gave the impression of saying things that were material without actually saying anything that was material. And that's a good, that's A+. Because usually they say, well, I can't talk about that. I'm not going to tell you that. He seemed like he was really being candid. For instance, Miguel says, how long do you see yourself as being CEO? Last question. I don't know. It seems impossible to predict. Like I said, I'm motivated to make Google into something even more amazing. We have a tremendous positive impact on the world, ultimately. He completely deflects. We're still number one. We're still 1% to where we should be. I'm sorry. I feel a deep sense of responsibility to try to move things along. Not enough people are focused on big change. Part of what I'm trying to do is take Google as a case study and really scale our ambition. Such that we are able to cause more positive change in the world and more technological change. I have a deep feeling we're not even close to where we should be. I like that. That's a technologist talking.
Yeah.
And you know, that Larry's pretty consistent on that. He's trying to get people to think bigger, and I really feel like he views Google as a platform by which to make the world a better place and have a technological impact. And so he's looking at the world of possibility and asking, why aren't we doing all these different things? And then how do we get to, we have the people and the resources and the ability to do those things, rather than, okay.
That's really amazing, Matt, because you're right. Google does more than so many other institutions have the power and ability and resources. And thus the fact that he feels that responsibility, I think, is great.
And I love it. You can tell he's a programmer and engineer because, Miguel says, one of the first instances of Plus being woven into other Google services was in search. There was a fair amount of criticism in some cases where somebody's not an active user of Google Plus. You put their profile in search results. Lady Gaga was the example we used. That's not necessarily the best use of that real estate. And some people went as far as saying you were betraying the promise of always giving the best unbiased search results. What's your reaction? And he says, well, what you should want to do is really build amazing products and really go with the long-term focus. We think about it somewhat differently, and this is the programmer. We're going to have people as a first-class object in search.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
It's people.search. Got it.
I was really surprised nobody took that completely out of context and said, you want people as a first-class object? You know, because that is a programmer speaking. Like, oh, people should be, you know, we should understand who people are and the relationship so that we can help improve things for them. But saying it's a first-class data type is a very techie thing to say.
I love it. I love it. I thought, God, that's great. I am surprised nobody took that out of context.
Yeah.
Well, everyone knows that's nerd. That's nerd.
Nerd speak. Talk.
I mean, you know, yeah.
Nerd
yeah.
speak.
First class object. I want to be a first class object in search.
I want a t-shirt. I want a Google t-shirt.
Actually, though, as much fun as we're making of that, I think that actually is really a telling statement.
Well, and Gina, you are a first-class object in search because if you search for Gina Trapani, like, you're in the knowledge graph because of Wikipedia. Right. So, there's pictures, and then we want to know the connections and the nodes so that we can say, you know, people who search for you also looked for Jeff Jarvis and Leo Laporte. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of funny. Bing actually rolled out something very similar this past week, and it's based off the same data, this Freebase data that where we acquired the company, and it's based off of Wikipedia as well. But it just shows all the search engines are trying to get to answers and trying to understand the world more. Mm-hmm. So you are a first class data type.
Yay.
I know. When I saw that panel, I felt very first class. I also felt pretty first class when author attribution rolled out. That was
That's nice too. I love that. Yep. Yeah. Yep. Just to defend Google Plus after my remarks,
you're going to eat crow, mister.
Well, it's numbers. I keep hearing these numbers, but I got to tell you, it still doesn't feel like it's vibrant community. More than 500 million people have upgraded. I guess that means they're using Google Plus. 235 million active across Google Plus, wanting apps in Google Play, hanging out in Gmail, writing reviews and maps. And 135 million are active in the stream. That's the real number, 135 million users. Because hanging out in Gmail doesn't mean you're a Google Plus user. It just means you're hanging out in Gmail. But 135 million, nothing to sneeze at.
Yeah.
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 Speaking of numbers, $500 million, that's the amount that Google and Apple are paying together.
Together.
Together. In harmony. For the Kodak patents, this was necessary for Kodak to exit its Chapter 11. And so that's good news for Kodak. And I think in a way good news because it's saying that Google and Apple, you know, are going to jointly own these patents, I presume. Or maybe they're going to divvy them up. I don't know how that works. We'll sue you over these. You sue us over those. I don't know. I would guess that it means fewer suits, but I don't know.
What struck me about that is that, okay, so now Kodak doesn't make film, it doesn't make pictures, it doesn't own photographic patents. Why does it exist? There's this because of equity markets,
right?
You've got to try to hold on and make this thing still live on, but it's nothing like what it was. It might as well just have died.
I am loving Google Now, by the way. And now it's coming to Chrome, apparently. I think Google Now should be everywhere. And I didn't realize this, but Google Now, is going to now offer activity summaries.
But only once a month, it says, which is so weird. I want it every day. If it's there, I want it every day. I'm carrying around my Fitbit. I mean, my Nike Fuel Band. I was ready to buy a Fitbit, but if Google can be my Fitbit, I want it.
It could do exactly the same thing, couldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, hopefully. But you have to remember the Fitbit, it works for like 5 or 6 days before recharging. You know, the phone, to have the accelerometer always on could sap some power. So until they come up with some low power way to do it, you know, you might be recharging your phone every, you know, afternoon or every night, something like that. But... It's certainly the case. I love Google Now as well. And I think it's pretty funny that at the beginning of this year, a lot of people were like, how dare Google have a unified privacy policy, much like all the other tech companies do. And yet it's exactly that sort of thing that allows you to say, hey, you've got a meeting, you know, 20 miles up the peninsula and traffic is bad. So show me a little alert that says leave now.
Google Now is my response to this whole privacy and apps thing is like, but if you give them information, it's amazing. The synergy of, because Google knows everything I do, they could tell me good stuff. Like they tell me every morning, you better leave for your Pilates class now. You got 5 minutes. It knows. It knows I go there every morning. It knows how long it takes to get there. And it actually tells me it's time to go.
Now, Matt, I complained about this on the show. I don't get enough of my Google Now.
I want more. He needs more.
It gives me two cars. Like, it's giving me Facebook stock and the weather. That's it. I've a million times said yes, you can share everything you want with it and all this kind of stuff, and I don't get enough.
I actually agree with you, because twice in the last week I've run into really bad traffic jams and you know, like parking lot on 101, and I'm like, come on, Google, you know I'm going to work, or you know that I'm driving down the street on the way home. Let me know that I should go some other route. So as far as I'm concerned, yes, you do have to worry about eventually becoming too annoying, but I'd like to see it more as well.
I think
more.
It makes sense. I think it would gradually roll out these features, so it's not to not to. So you're getting the fitness thing, Jeff? Are you seeing that? Because I haven't seen it yet.
No, I haven't got it yet. I found the article, but I didn't. I didn't know that it was kind of hidden in the December 5 announcement of the new Google Now.
That's excited.
And so it says that once a month it'll have that. It's part of the travel thing. I guess it knows how far you've gone.
It knows how. It knows when you are sleeping. It knows when you're awake.
And it tells you how many miles you've biked and how many miles you've walked. It would be cool if it was like you drove this many miles and you spent this much on gas or used this much gas, or here's this route that you've taken over and over again. If you take this other, you know, turn, you'll save this much in gas or time. I mean, you really can see. I feel like Google Now is just this dark horse. Like, I feel like it's just going to keep getting better and better. Like, it just feels like the perfect interface. It feels like it should be the interface on Google Glass. It's a really, really, really good product. Not a lot of people know about it or talk about it yet. I don't know if that's just because it's sort of new, or it's just on newer versions of Android, or what.
That's the issue, you know. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think by this time next year, people will be talking about Google Now a lot more.
Yeah. Wow. Snoop Dogg's coming to the Phoenix next Saturday. Oh, sorry. Actually, I'm on the list to go see Snoop. It's right across the street. Did you ever do show more cards, Jeff? Did you get more cards when you showed Mark?
No.
At the bottom, it says show more cards.
Actually, I have a tip for this. Jeff, do you happen to know if you're signed into your apps account on Chrome and then signed into a different account on Google Now? Because if you are signed into two different accounts...
It wouldn't know all
your
stuff.
That. I've shifted everything to my apps account. The only thing it's not is because, damn you, Google, I'm still stuck with my other address for my Google Plus account.
Ah, there you go.
Because
that's
because
why.
Because pre-apps.
You
but
got
everything else, calendar, email, everything is on my apps address. And Google Now and the phone and the device are my apps address.
Okay.
Well. So there is a path where you can try to migrate your personal Gmail to your apps account on Google Plus. And my guess is you could try that, and then if you run into any obstacles, we could probably try to make sure that everybody gets migrated correctly. But I'll see if I can find the link and post it in the rundown chat, Jeff.
Okay. I can't, it's just my weekly complaint.
We like the tech support sessions with Jeff.
Instead of having the number of the week, can we shift to Jeff's wine of the week?
I love it that, for instance, if you're in a different country with different currency, it'll show you currency conversions. Oh. I mean, there's just so much cool stuff.
I want Google to take over my life. It already has.
Yeah. I basically gave up Take me, Google. I'm yours. I'm yours, Google. But there's one thing. I got a bone to pick with you, Matt Cutts.
Uh-oh.
Google tweaks image search to make porn harder to find. Did you do that?
I did not do that, but I knew that was coming.
Hey, careful.
So how long of an answer do you want?
I like it long.
Oh, dear. Okay.
From now on, the whole show is going to be double entendre. Just because of you.
Show title.
Well,
great,
okay,
great lower third. Great lower third, Matt.
Yes, please don't fire me. Thank you. Yeah, don't kill me.
If I type porn in my search and I do an image search, uh-huh, I'm less likely to get...
A little bit less likely. So the reason
actually,
for this is...
I'm getting some good stuff here, actually.
Oh, yes, man.
So there's a historical artifact, which is when we did safe search for web search, it could either be on or it could be off. And that makes sense. The problem is when you start to apply that to image search, well, we don't want to, you know, assume people don't want anything by default, but we also don't want porn, you know, loading up in everybody's searches. And so we had a middle ground for image search that was called moderate. And that would say, you know, when you're in moderate mode, which was the default, okay, just sort of don't show... you know, unless you're really, really sure that someone's looking for porn. If you know, our job is to help you find what you want. If we're really, really sure that you're looking for porn, maybe then fine. But otherwise, for the most part, try not to just like barrage you, you know, throw a bunch of porn in your face.
Right.
And so, but at the same time, having all these different settings is a little bit complicated. So we're trying to simplify things and just say, okay, safe search is on or safe search is off. And so we've moved that setting over to image search. And now on image search, if you want to, you can click. There's a safe search button in the right-hand side. And you can select exactly what level of, you know, you do or you don't want safe search on or off. And
that's it now. It's just binary. It's either on or it's off. Okay.
Instead of having three settings, which is a little weird.
So I can't get moderately sexy pictures anymore.
Well, so again, it depends on how long you want to go on the porn stuff. But essentially, if you want the porn, just search for porn terms and really explicit porn terms, and then
you'll get it.
Show up. But it'll, if you search for like bikinis, then we don't know that that's what you're looking for, and so we'll err towards being.
That makes perfect sense.
So the Olaport nude, you would assume I know what I'm going to get.
Those pictures, I took them out of circulation. There, I think I was young. I needed the money.
We have an entire team of people whose job it is to do well on porn searches, and so we think about what are called porn seeking queries, and their job is to make
hold on right there. This is too good. So there's a porn department at Google?
Of course there is. It's huge.
There's gotta be, yeah.
It's massive.
And it comes with therapy, doesn't it? I mean,
I remember reading an article by somebody who was doing that. It just said it just wears on you after a while.
You get a little bit inured to it after a while. Yeah. But I was reading the Slashdot article one time, and they're like, oh, man, imagine being the porn person at Google. That would be the best job in the entire world. And I was reading Safe Search, and I was like, well, that is an okay job. It doesn't suck. You get tired of it after a while. So, but there are a lot of people who would actually maybe want to do that job.
No.
But it's a group of engineers. They're well-trusted.
It's the same thing my son says. I'd like to be a video game tester when I grow up. It's not. Yeah. It takes all the fun out of it.
Right. And it's not as fun.
Now, but you did do something right, because when I search for Christmas on Google, I get Christmas stuff. When I search for Hanukkah, I get Hanukkah stuff. But when I search for my favorite holiday, Festivus, I not only get a search results, I get an actual Festivus poll on the webpage.
Yes.
That is crazy, man.
I feel good. This is, I actually proposed this Easter egg. And I
oh, yay, Matt.
Yeah, because Paul Buchheit, I remember years and years ago, you know, he had left Google and he was at Friend Feed and he was saying, yeah, they do Hanukkah and they do, you know, Christmas doodles, but I've never seen a Festivus Easter egg. Hey, how are, and of course our doodle team is phenomenal. And so in like 2 hours, they're like, oh, how about this? And you're like, wow, that's incredible. Yes, that would be wonderful.
It's a Festivus miracle. And I think we have our own Festivus poll here at the studio, which almost killed me, by the way, the other day, because it wasn't completely hooked up. So Festivus is a, for those of you.
Well, I thought that was your stripper's pole, Leo.
I do have an amazing core, but I'll show you that another time. Festivus, for those who don't remember, was a fake holiday invented on the Seinfeld show. But it's really by George Costanza, of course. And but really, the truth is, you know, in this politically correct era, I think it's better to wish us all a happy Festivus. It's a non-denominational holiday. I didn't know this, but it's December 23rd. So,
So you can celebrate both. Multiple.
Yeah, oh,
both.
You get them all.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, there's an aluminum pole. There's no Christmas tree, but it's an aluminum pole set up like a Christmas tree.
It needs no decoration.
The annual airing of grievances and feats of strength are very important.
Did you know it's actually based on one of the staff writers who actually did have it as a fake holiday in his family?
Oh, my God.
It's like that's this awesome. Whole
of Festivus and like the war on Festivus, and it's pretty crazy.
Congratulations, Matt. You have made a permanent mark on the world.
I think that's the greatest thing. A great Easter egg.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Thank you.
And you have Christmas and Hanukkah and all those. So if you search for those, you'll also see.
Oh, I didn't see anything. So if I do okay.
You know, assuming we can spell Hanukkah, which...
Well, that's... You know, the truth is when I want to know how to spell Hanukkah, you know where I go? Google. you mean H-A-N-U-K-K-H-A-H. That Hanukkah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. See, there's the little stars of David. I didn't see anything for Christmas. Let me do Christmas again. Oh, Christmas. Let's spell it right.
Let's see.
I don't see anything.
I guess closer to the date. It is Hanukkah now. That's why, right?
Mm-mm.
Well, I said Festivus is awfully far away.
You guys have something against Christians?
Yeah.
No.
It's the war on... Hey, Fox News. Google has a war on Christmas.
You laugh, but somebody literally did do that article because they can't help themselves.
It's unbelievable. We are joking. It's not true. We have so much more we could talk about. The ITU is just winding up their secret, super secret meeting in Dubai. I don't know if
I went to the ITU site just to see what they were saying.
Yeah.
And Tunisia had tried to pass a statement from the ITU saying simply that the rights you have in life, you have online. And they wouldn't do it. And instead, honest to God, with straight face, they ordered that the director shall release a strongly worded press release.
Hey, sometimes a strongly worded press release is all it takes. Just ask Reed Hastings.
Oh.
Speaking of which, Redbox is starting up its Verizon streaming service to take on Netflix. Facebook has decided, even though it got 88% opposed, 668,000 votes, they've decided you're not going to get to vote because 30 million people didn't weigh in. So that's
300
it.
300 million. Isn't it 300 million?
Oh, you're right. It's 300 million. It's got to be a third, right? So democracy is dead on Facebook, of course. Whoever thought that was going to happen.
But it was absurd to have the town hall model on Facebook. I do, however, still, I've argued this with Google in the past. I would argue with Facebook that I think there is a role for a kind of council of peers as an advisory group, that you could even be elected or something. That when Google's greatest vulnerability to me is that an advertiser can say that you hold the power of God over me, because Google's main area of monopoly is advertising. It's not search. It's not other areas. It is the power there is advertising. So, you know, I would argue that you could have some kind of a court of appeal. I think Facebook should have, you know, councils of users. But the idea that 30% of all Facebook users would vote for anything was absurd on its face from the beginning.
I remember, it was proposed as a settlement to the FTC.
Not so much to the FTC. I think it was before that. I think there was a kind of a protest group before.
Oh, okay.
He changes.
So it doesn't have legal clout. Because I thought it was something that they had agreed to do. Oh, anyway.
Someone will tell me if I'm wrong.
Well, obviously it wasn't, because they've decided they're not going to do it anymore. And it wasn't going to happen.
Yeah, someone wrote a piece, maybe it was Matthew Ingram, who basically said, you know, this is actually a good thing. Why should we pretend that this is actually democracy? Like, it's better that we just stop pretending anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree with Matthew, because it, you know, I mean, come on. First of all, 30 million people are not going to ever vote on anything, or 300 million, pardon me. Anyway, the whole thing was nuts. So just send me some chocolates from your Facebook account, and I'll be happy. This is bad news. Boy Genius Report did some, somebody did some calculations and figured out that if Google were to fiber the entire country, give a gigabit fiber, the stuff they're getting in Kansas City, it would cost $140 billion. Actually, it was Goldman Sachs that estimated that.
Not so fast, Buster.
Oh.
Because then Forbes came back and said, whoa, you know what? That's not so expensive. That's not as if Google has to pay that all out of its cash. This is a capital investment over a long term. It's basically like $1,000 per household, if Goldman Sachs is right. With the return you'd get, it's pretty incredible. And Eric Schmidt did just say that Kansas City is not the end.
Good.
That Google's ambitions will spread past the lovely wheat-filled plains of the Midwest.
And Netflix weighing in, saying, in fact, Google Fiber is the most, because they know, because they push a lot of video, is the most consistently fast ISP in America, beating even Verizon Fios for that honor. So that's good. There you get, if you got fiber from Google, you're watching your movies in high def. Someday we'll get that.
The whole stat about it would cost $140 billion to wire fiber up on the whole country. For some reason, that reminds me of the analyst report that said YouTube must be losing hundreds of millions of dollars a year. It's like, you know, analysts are taking guests, but they don't really know what the cost structure is, what the scale is, all that sort of stuff.
And Matt, you're right. It's also that you're not looking at the full P&L. You throw out one big number and say, well, that's scary. But imagine if we could suddenly all get, of course, and should it be fiber? Imagine if we could all get really good internet access without all of the net neutrality fights and all that. We actually had competition in this sphere. How wonderful is that world?
Yeah, and asymmetric. So upload is as fast as download. That would enable a lot of interesting things.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Mm. Incredible. From thoughtcatalog.com, William Hudson figures out how to hack Chipotle. Get more meat in your burrito. This is literally a Chipotle mind trick.
Twig listeners brought this to my attention. And so, this is relevant to your interests.
When they ask you,
I've gotten so many recommendations for this week.
When they ask you, black beans or pinto beans, did you know you can say both?
I had no idea. That's crazy. Crazy talk.
Now, he does say execution is key. If you make your eventual position known from the start, Chipotle is going to turn its back on you. So answer the question with one bean. Don't tell them both. Timing matters. Wait for the beans to be applied to the burrito, then say, can I have pinto beans too? This method ensures two full scoops of both.
Yeah, I go in and I say I'll have a little brown rice and a lot of black beans, so I always get double scoops of black beans. Because at my age, of course, I need the fiber.
I go light on the rice too.
Now, here's another handy one. When you're asked what kind of meat, you can say half chicken, half steak. And the point he makes is, now, that sounds like one half plus one half, but because a scoop of meat is just a scoop of meat, nobody in Chipotle management has introduced half scoops. So you can ask for half chicken, half steak, and you'll get more of both. Unlike with the beans, you should make your position on the half meats clear from the beginning. Otherwise, they'll charge you for extra meat.
I heard a guy in there last week, because Prue and I went there last week, saying that he got charged for triple meat.
Right.
Whoa.
If I had this burrito with double beans and double meat, I would pass out.
Well, there's more.
Like already full.
There's more. Ask for fajitas in your burrito. The grilled onions and peppers, they're next to the rice. They're right there. They don't ask you, but you can say you want them, and they'll know you know.
You can make two meals off of that.
It also says, and I think this is the final bit, make an informed decision regarding the guacamole.
Yes.
You may be not all three salsas, okay? But the guacamole situation requires a real value judgment. Basically, you could get two whole avocados at the market for the price of one scoop. Consider ordering a burrito bowl and adding your own sliced avocado on top. If you forego the meat, the guacamole is free. Just a little tip there.
That's a good tip, actually. I'd do that.
Also, Google onion chipotle. You'll find the piece from The Onion Chipotle employee just gave guy in front of you more.
Breaking news. And the onion's on it. And of course, I haven't had lunch, so I'm faint with hunger right now. So thanks. Just get guy in front of you.
I loved the Onion article that was like, Google shuts down Gmail for 2 hours to display its immense power or something like that.
By the way, there were outages of both, wasn't it Gmail and Facebook this week? Not long, but enough to cause me some shakes.
Yeah.
These things happen.
Those days, you're just like, oh, it's going to be one of those days, you know?
Yeah. I might have to go outside. Maybe visit a Chipotle.
It is one of those moments, though, where you question what your life when you're like, wait a second, I don't have this thing to play with. I missed it. I missed the Gmail outage. I saw friends of mine like talking about it, and I was like, whew, good thing I didn't infect me.
Dodged a bullet there.
Speaking of going outside, have you guys played Ingress at all?
I just got it, thanks to Chad. Okay. And he didn't warn me that, in fact, you have to get up and walk around.
Outside.
I'd like to go to the tapes on that one. I warned you.
I'm a little upset.
Chad warned.
What kind of game is this? You can't play it if you're sitting at your desk.
No, you got to walk miles and miles.
Well,
Matt, are you resistance or enlightened?
I'm resistance because I like resistant things.
Are you enlightened?
I'm enlightened. I went with enlightened.
So, no, I'm still in the tutorial because I have to walk around.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy.
So the idea is you're collecting this XM stuff. Now I got to go to a portal. Enemy controlled portal. But the problem with that is, okay, it sees where I am. This is my range. The portal, I have to get up and go there. I can't just sit here and play the game. XM, this stuff, XM will come to you, but the portal won't come to you.
And that's the speakeasy across the street.
I was going to say that portal's so close to you, Leo.
Yeah.
Well, I'm in the middle of a show.
Well, okay. Fair enough.
Yeah. I can't go there.
You can remotely do things to portals, I think.
It's just right outside of
the 50 meter.
Nothing. Hack, deploy, recharge, upgrade, nothing. All I can do is cancel target. But this, I have to say, I don't know why this game. This is from Google, right? The same people who did Field Trip.
Yes.
Niantic.
I don't know why Google is doing this to me. Is it because they want me to exercise more?
I have heard people who said I've lost 10 pounds playing Ingress. But, you know, if you wanted to be cynical, you could say, well, people can submit points of interest. So these portals are around things that are interesting, like statues or, you know, post offices. And you actually learn a lot about your town walking around. Like, I've been to 5 or 6 statues I never would have seen. And so cynically, you could say, well, it's Google could gather data or you can submit new points of interest. But like a lot of people have been losing weight or getting more healthy playing it, except for the one guy who said he actually got arrested. Because he was playing at like 2 a.m. at night, and the cops were like, what's this guy doing with his phone open?
And,
you know.
And it makes a lot of noise while it's going around. It's talking to you, and it's making sounds. Well, I have to take a day off just to play Ingress.
Yeah, you do. I was talking about this with Kevin Purdy, and he was saying that he was reading a Reddit thread where people were saying post offices are a very popular place for portals to be because they have to be public places. But you know, you got the guy like standing outside of the post office, like taking pictures and like tapping at the phone, and was starting to get like kind of the hairy eyeball from the police officer.
I
want to
do
like,
this.
What's going on?
This. Yeah, this is the you know, the Homeland Security is going to be shutting Ingress down. So I didn't get an invite. So Chad invited me. So I'm brand new at this. Just started this on Sunday. So yesterday. What do I do? So I'll choose at some point whether I'm enlightened or
resistance. Mm-hmm.
And then does that mean anything? It's just two teams.
Just two factions.
Yeah, blue team and a green team. And what people recommend is pick the underdog because, you know, if you're part of the dominant group in your area, you're not going to get as many points and experiences. Whereas if you're, like, trying to take down and hack the portals of the over, you know, dogs, then you get more experience and you have more fun with it.
See, when I was born, I asked to be a white male. And, yeah.
Chose the wrong side, Leo.
Chose the wrong side, I guess. Straight white male. Yeah. Look where it's got me. Yeah.
Playing on easy.
Playing on.
What the heck?
I am. I'm playing on easy. You guys, you go ahead. You do the hard mode. I'm taking it easy. I'm telling you, I'm not ambitious. I'm taking it easy. I'm satisfied.
It's good to be content.
Show title.
Yeah.
So what you'll do is you'll go hack portals, and
right.
then that covers the area. So you're claiming area for your side of the game, and that'll help, you know.
Should I do it at work or home?
You should do, no, you're
where in, it's available.
You're in Manhattan. You got to go out the door. You can't do it at work or home. You can't. You have to walk. That's
yeah,
what
I know, but where do I start? If I start at home out in the burbs, no?
It doesn't matter. It's just where you are, right? You can play at home.
You can go
work.
To, I believe it's ingress.com/intel, and you can see the portals around you.
Ah.
So you can see if there's a place that has more portals, you'd start there.
Yeah. I bet Petaluma is probably a very good place to play.
It's not as good as San Francisco, but...
Big city. See, right. Jeff's got the great opportunity there.
Yes.
He's going to be here in heaven. Now, you
Holy
can't...
Crap, this Intel site is great. I have no idea.
Pro tip.
Thanks, Chad.
No
Chad's
problem.
The king of pro tips.
Oh.
There's also a subreddit called Ingress, and they share some codes that will get you extra experience points and resonators and hacking stuff. So you can tell Chad and I play quite a bit.
It's an awesome...
Right.
Actually, in all seriousness, it is an awesome game.
It's kind of addictive.
Yeah.
So you can hear the portals in Petaluma and see these ones have been connected by the Enlightened. And so this is their area.
Oh. Resistance. So I'm going to be Resistance.
Right.
So can I go in there and break it up?
Exactly.
Yes.
That's what you want to do. And so if you were to take this portal here, that would mean they wouldn't have any.
No, the show's over. I'm out of here.
Actually, what you really want to do is walk. Instead of walking to this one that's closest, walk over to here to this one.
That's my old apartment. What the hell?
Because then you would have all of these connected.
Oh, it's the Petaluma Fire Department. Yeah.
Right.
So I'm going to go over to the Petaluma Fire Department, act suspiciously, take pictures, and I'll win the game.
Hang out there for 20 minutes
on the way to Guantanamo Bay.
Yes.
Yeah. You don't have to take pictures, but a lot of the points of interest are elementary schools, which feels really, really creepy unless you come on the weekend. So.
U.S. Post Office, Fire Department, Penry Park.
Yeah, do it after 5 p.m.
No. Petaluma Historical Museum, Volpe's Grocery, which is a speakeasy.
Right.
Across the street.
And so that was in...
That's the one I was seeing.
And that was most likely in a field trip because it has history. It was probably already added to Field Trip.
Uh-huh.
Got it. So Field Trip there's a nexus.
Right. And so if you even look down here, it looks like there's a point of interest that hasn't been claimed yet. This is that
That's my house.
Petaluma Wildlife
Museum.
Oh,
yeah. That's at the high school.
Right. So that...
I might get on my bike and play Ingress.
Yeah.
A bike is a great way to play.
Username Chief Twit, by the way. and does that matter? Is there a social element to this? Can I team up with you? There is. Wow.
There's actually chat on each side, and so you can arrange to mount a massive attack. You know, if there's some high level portal that you couldn't hack by yourself, you can get a group of people to attack it.
This might be the most interesting, massively multiplayer online game I've ever seen.
Yeah, and just as a thing, I just want everyone to know on Twitter, I have no invites left. Unfortunately, you can see that right there. You can try to hit me up on Twitter, but no invites left. Sorry.
I don't have any invites either.
Yeah.
Because you start with zero, probably.
I would love to see what the Mountain View map looks like.
Have you played, Jeff?
Oh. No, because I've got to get the same thing as you, Leo. I got to get the time and go out and do it.
Ingress.com, you sign up for a... Mm-hmm. Are they sending out invites now pretty quickly?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So it might take a couple weeks to get an invite, but Jeff, to your point, Mountain View is crazy. It's like full on. You know, the portals change sides two or three times an hour, of thing. It's pretty nuts.
Well, there's 28 million enlightened. Is that people? 24 million resistance.
So mind units, Leo. Units.
But that means there are 52 million mind units playing this game.
No. So whenever you draw one of those triangles, that's covering
that's
a certain number of houses. And so a mind unit is roughly like a residential
house. I see. So these are the people we've taken over.
Yeah. It's a lot like Risk, except in the real world. It's a lot of fun.
Oh, it's freaking awesome. Wow.
You can see right for the Googleplex. The Googleplex is a hotbed of activity.
Look at that. How are they getting anything done?
It's my 20%.
Yeah. The holidays have started,
I'm going to be working on my 20% today.
You can tell which Google side is resistance or enlightened by which building
has
the nodes.
Yeah. So Matt, is Niantic... Tell me about Niantic. This was an acquisition at Google?
No, it's John Henke and Michael and like a whole bunch of people who had done sort of Google Earth and geo sort of stuff. And I think it was one of these things where they were thinking about leaving Google, and instead Google said, well, why don't you make a company inside of Google? And so I think Niantic refers to the name of a ship that actually is underground in San Francisco. And the idea is, all around you, there's all kinds of interesting history and things to discover that you might not know. And so Field Trip is one of those things that helps you find things near you. And then this is another fun game that helps you discover stuff near you. And then you can also submit potential portals. There's also an alternate reality game that's sort of got all these conspiracy undertones to it. So you can get in at whatever level you're interested in and join.
That's the Niantic Project?
Mm-hmm.
NianticProject.com or Twitter.com/Niantic Project, a slow leak of information. This was what I was been worried about all along, is that at some point I would be subsumed by some highly compulsive technology.
Like the internet.
Like the internet. And I've avoided it up to now through podcasting and other distractions.
Well, it's like Joey Ito was. I mean, the man is now heading the MIT Media Lab, but for like two
World
or three
of Warcraft,
years of his life.
We lost him.
He did nothing but play World of Warcraft.
We lost him to World of Warcraft. Okay, we didn't mention Habermas, but here's your Gutenberg moment, ladies and gentlemen, a visualization. Oh, first a sponsor message. Really? Let's just skip that.
Yeah, you don't skip it. It's not that good. You can drink anyway, he said Gutenberg. It's fine.
It's not that good.
You know what's better? You know what's better, Leo?
What?
If you want to take 1 minute?
Yeah.
Go back up to the bottom of the Google section, the punch card thing. Have you seen that?
No.
What Google would have been in 1960, the madman view. It's wonderful. It really is brilliantly done. And you can just get started and get the idea.
I started watching a new BBC show called The Hour that's about the BBC in 1956. It's kind of a British madman. It's
an interface to current search. So you can search for Laporte, let's say.
Oh, well, okay. So it's with the punch cards.
It's like Fortran all over again.
Yeah, anybody of a certain age is going to really kind of be scary. Oh, my God. There's the teletype. Oh, my God.
This is the best part.
This is how it was. I hate to tell you.
It's showing an impact printer going along. It does a ASCII of Google.
That's
ASCII,
a teletype.
Diagram of Google. And then it makes you make a choice in teletype.
You misspelled my name, you nitwit.
Oh, did I?
Jeez.
I'm also switching the show.
Oh, that. Okay. Well, if you're going to use the punch cards.
Let's see if 1960 Google asks you, did you mean?
You know, that's actually accurate because... with punch cards, you make one mistake, the whole job is ruined.
Right, right.
So in a way, that's actually very accurate.
And so it does that. It goes to the teletype, and then it goes to a tape drive, and it's just very funny. But it's really very, very cute.
It's got the lights on the front. That's what they sound like. This is real. This is exactly. Yeah. And when Bill Gates started programming, this is how he was programming, with a timeshare computer with a teletype. Wow. Reading from Channel 4 device card reader. And it was this fast, by the way.
No.
So I could do an image search? That's got to be a hoot. What's that going to look like? Is it ASCII art? Oh, my God.
I don't know. I guess so. Now we have a tape drive.
Now, this is skeuomorphism put to a good purpose.
Yes.
Wow.
Had you seen this, Matt?
Yes. Have you guys seen the Google postcard? That's also kind of fun.
Where they mail you a postcard with the search results?
I'll paste it into the chat, but it's basically like if Google were a postcard where you'd write what you wanted and then send the postcard off, and 30 days later we'll send you back an answer.
This is masswork, masswerk.at, which I think is Austria, /Google60. Wow. And it's going to do an image plot. It is. It's ASCII art.
Yeah, ASCII art of the image.
Holy camoly. That is a hoot and a holler. Le père du bébé de Rachida, Dati n'est pas la porte. So this is somebody else, but that's good. I'm glad to know I wasn't the father. Ladies and gentlemen, we take a break. Come back in just a minute with our tip, tool, and number of the week, and then we'll wrap this thing up. Triangulation's coming up. Our guest today on Triangulation is...
Guy Kawasaki.
Guy Kawasaki. He's got a new book out, former Apple evangelist. And let's hope he's patient, because we're running late, as always. Our show today brought to you by Squarespace, the best web hosting out there. I'm telling yous. Not just good hosting, great content management system. They're tightly integrated, which means you get the best of both worlds. Hosting that doesn't go down, software that's always kept up to date and secure. You never have to worry about updating it. And they've done features. They've done things that the other guys only dream of. Mobile responsive design on all sites on Squarespace now. So that means when you design a site and you use the great templates, you don't have to know anything about what that means. You don't. If you do, by the way, know JavaScript, HTML5, CSS3, all of that. They've got a developer platform that's fantastic with, you know, code coloring, syntax, and all that stuff. But even if you don't, you just drag and drop. You take the template, you customize it, and automatically, as part of the package, that site's going to look great. There's no mobile version. It's all going to work great on any size screen, from 3.5 inches to 27 inches and everywhere in between. And when you post, you automatically resize all the different, you get 7 different image sizes so that they'll use the right image. They do the whole thing. It's beautiful. They flow it. It's really good if you're artistic. If you have a aesthetic, a photographer or a designer or a architect, and you want a site that reflects your aesthetic, you get these great templates. You make the site look your own. And it's really good for images and all of this stuff. I really like Squarespace. I know you will, too. And the best part is you can try this free for 2 weeks if you go to squarespace.com. And just click the Get Started button, and they'll walk you through the process. You can import all of your existing content if you have a site already. Supports the major APIs, Blogger, Typepad, Movable Type. If you decide, after looking at all of this, that, yeah, I like this, go to the pricing section. Your mind will be blown. 2 weeks free, 24/7 support and everything. But they only have 2 plans now. They've really simplified this. There's the $8 a month and the $16 a month, in both cases when you pay annually. Don't even forget the 8. I mean, I guess, you know, if it's just a simple site and you just want to, you know, something quick. But look what you get for $16 a month. Unlimited pages, unlimited galleries. If you're a photographer, that's great. Each client can have their own gallery. Unlimited blogs. Unlimited bandwidth. You don't have to ever worry about suddenly getting popular and getting a bandwidth bill. Never. $16 a month, that's it. Unlimited storage, unlimited contributors. When you buy an annual plan, they'll automatically give you a custom domain. You choose the custom domain, they'll register it for you for free and hook it up to the Squarespace site. Lots of great features. I want you to try it today. And when you buy, do me a favor. Use the offer code TWIG12. They'll know you heard it on TWIG, and you'll get 10% off as a thank you. 10% off your first purchase with new accounts when you use the offer code TWIG12. Google Dash Cloud. By the way, thank you, Squarespace. You always tell when it's not a Squarespace site because we bring it to its knees. Let's see if we can bring Google-Classic.com. Is this the postcard? This is the postcard. That's hysterical. Please allow 30 days.
Yeah.
I like how each character gets its own.
That's great. Yeah, its own little
space.
Actually did the search, though.
There was one that was like medieval Google or something like that. I couldn't find that in time. What doth thou seek or something?
YTMND, medieval Google. Loading sign. I don't know if this is it. Yeah. Webby Portraits, Guilds, Cryer Kingdom. Thine query. Hie thee hence. Feelest thou fortunate? It's on burlap. All right, time for our the tip of the week from Gina Trapani.
Well, I have to thank Yoshioni in the chat room for this one. I actually missed this. It should have been in the changelog, but I just got released today. I think Google Currents for Android got a pretty big update. Oh. It's not out for iOS yet. It's just Android. Makes it easier to scan headlines and get breaking news and kind of groups publications into different categories. So Currents is the kind of Flipboard-like tablet app for reading blogs and online magazines. So this looks like a pretty nice update. Leo, you're a Flipboard guy, right?
Yeah, I love Flipboard, but I like Currents a lot too, and I'm glad to see the competition. Oh, I have
and
a lot
Google
of...
Google News also got a big upgrade. If you just go to the web page on an Android device for Google News, it's much nicer as well.
Oh, good.
Oh, cool.
That's good. Because I want to see news and currents kept up to date and so forth. I mean, I think Google Plus, you know, scares me that it's going to take over all Google interfaces. So that's nice. Boy, yeah. Shopper's being updated. Google Earth's being updated. Google Drive's being updated. That's probably the save you were talking about. And the Google mm-hmm. Currents... Field Trip is being updated. So lots of updates I just got all of a sudden.
I'm going to buy it, Leo.
The what? The Note?
Yeah.
Pretty sweet.
It is sweet. I'm liking my Nexus 4, but I don't know.
It's pretty sweet. It's ginormous. I was walking around talking on it yesterday, and they were mocking me. This doesn't look weird. Hello. What? That doesn't look weird. Hello. Yes. I'm on the phone right now. Does that look weird? I don't think that looks...
It does have a bit of Fisher Price about it.
Maybe I'm just used to it. I don't talk on the phone that much, but...
From the side angle, it might look a little large. But from there...
That's what she said.
There's a tablet stuck to my face.
I like my Note, too. I really do. I really, really do. Okay, so I'm updating Currents. Actually, I could show you. I think it got updated.
Oh, yeah, cool. Yeah, I was going to ask if you
Currents. Yeah, it just got updated. So let's see what the... Oh, I have to hold it way over here now to do the stretch. Oh, yeah, it's very different. Whole new look to Currents. So, yeah, it's not quite Flipboard, but I think it looks good. I like it a lot. You know what I miss? Oh, yeah. Oh, it's got... You know what it's looking like? Google Now what? A little bit. It's got a little bit of a Now card. Oh, yeah. Oh, it's got that Google Plus slide up thing on the bottom now. Oh, I like it. I like it. That's good. I forgot to mention that Google's got $10 billion in Bermuda, but we don't need to mention that anymore. Yeah. This is good. Can I share it now? One of the things I do is I share it. It's got all the sharing things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's cool. It's one of the things that really makes Android special.
Wow, your share menu is voluminous.
You can share it anywhere.
Good God, look at that. That is impressive.
It's as big as my phone, baby.
Your phone isn't even big enough to accommodate
that. It's dynamic. But that's what I love about it. I love that. That's and you know iPhone doesn't do that. It's Facebook or Twitter.
You are the god of oversharing. Roger Cohen in the New York Times had a column going against oversharing. How often it was, and he had this tweet that he said, I just happened upon this tweet by this woman named whatever that I have this volcanic zit, and I thought, boy that sounds weird. I went looking on Twitter for the tweet, couldn't find it, went around. I realized I quoted it in my book.
Oh boy.
Oh.
2 years ago. And at the Times just had to put up a correction about it because that's the latest tweet he could find that was awful. But you, Leo, you are his poster boy
for Overshare. I like this. You know what? I'm going to use this. I like the new – the redesign's fantastic.
Really, really, really nice.
Good. Yeah, and so easy to read.
Yeah.
Yeah, congratulations to Loic, by the way. The web conference was – he's been trying to sell it for years. He finally found a sucker to buy it.
Oh, he did? Who bought it?
Reed Mitem. They're a big conference organizer. They don't do any tech conferences. This will be their first tech conference. They do a music conference and I think a television conference. And they bought a majority stake, but Loic and Geraldine will still be doing the show. It's actually one of the best.
Okay.
It's a wonder. Have you ever done the web? It's just...
I wish I could. It's bad timing for me. It's my pre-graduation.
It's London and it's Paris and it's just the best. We didn't go this year and I'm sad.
Yeah.
I love it. Great event. And so congratulations, Loic. That's great. Do you have a number for us, Mr. G?
Yeah, I do real quick. Removal requests to Google are up 10x
wow.
in 6 months to 2.5 million per week. And Google, by the way, removes 97.5% of them. and guesses as to why, but one guess is just a lot more. The interface to submit them was made easier. Thank you very much, Google. And there are more routines to try to find allegedly offending content online.
And you get this from the Google Transparency Report, which is cool that they publish this information.
This was I think so, right.
Yeah. But they're not all DMCA.
No, they're not all. A lot of them are.
And you can see the different organizations that are asking for it. Top copyright owners in the past month, top domains specified. Most of them are torrent sites. In fact, at least in the top five are torrent sites. So probably a lot of them are. But look at that graph. This is 2012, 2011. Just jumped per week. That's the per week requests. Go ahead.
I have a community on Google Plus. It's there now.
Is for Twig?
Invited you guys. Yeah.
Good.
Oh, cool.
So I guess you could search for communities. So search for Twig and communities. Oh, there it is. Look, preview community. That's cool. That's nice. My tool was going to be Ingress, but I already showed it. So.
Sorry.
No, I'm thrilled. That's just, I got some pro tips. That's important. And I'm about to walk out the door and go take over the post office. See, you say things like that, and I think the government gets upset.
Yeah. It's just out of context.
Yeah.
That's all. The post office needs somebody who cares about it.
I'm just going to take my cell phone and tap a few keys, and then it'll be mine. Now, that didn't come out right either.
I think the government would say, Leo, you're welcome to it.
I
think the government would say use stamps.
I want to take it for the resistance. See, all of this is just asking for trouble. And you know that the NSA is running an automated filter on this podcast and that as soon as they hear this, if I disappear, you'll know why.
You're not there with a phone clearly because it's too big. It must be some strange new tricorder.
Well, exactly. You want to flash this. You're in trouble.
Well, at least people aren't using words like bomb making.
Hey, stop it. Stop it. Stop it. Hummus.
Oh, sorry. Sorry.
Jeez.
There was one guy in the Usenet days who his email signature was like every keyword he could think of.
I remember that.
You know, that might trigger things.
He was trying to get Echelon to. By the way, whatever happened to that guy?
Yeah, don't hear from him that much.
Yeah, he kind of disappeared. Huh. Got very quiet all of a sudden.
And Matt also has a tip.
Oh, Matt Cutts, a tip from the Googleplex.
Sure. So this actually came out this morning. You know, we have a free thing at google.com/webmasters that lets you get all kinds of great information from Google. But there hasn't been that much of a way to give information to Google. You could mark things up and do all the HTML and, you know, all that sort of stuff, XML, but that's kind of a hassle. So we just launched something that we announced on the Google Webmaster blog called the Data Highlighter. And so instead of making the markup and editing your HTML, you can go to here. Right now it's for events, so things like concerts. But you basically can highlight something and say, okay, this is the name. You can highlight and say, this is what the date is.
Wow.
And Google will learn the structure of that page and all the other stuff on your page, on your site, and then we'll possibly be able to highlight that in the search results.
Brilliant.
Oh, cool.
Semantic web. You tell Google.
Without all the hassle.
That's really great. By the way, Matt does some great on the webmasters tools. Does great videos that everybody should be watching.
Mm-hmm.
Just really love your stuff, Matt. You're very helpful to everybody who wants to show up well in Google. Are you demonstrating something, Chad? There.
This is just the video that was on the.
There you go.
On the.
There's Matt Cutts.
Right.
It's actually my Jack. He's like two offices down.
Jack. It's Jack. Like
Yeah.
Hey, thanks, everybody. It's so much fun to do the show. Thanks to Lamar Wilson, who joins us at the beginning to talk about YouTube. Matt Cutts, who is the guy who keeps spam off our web results. And
we love you, Matt.
We love Matt.
Back on the show.
Yeah, thank you, Matt.
He's one of us. That's why we love him so much. He's
always good to see you guys.
He's a first-class person.
You're not. You're resistance,
first
right?
First-class object. A twig.
All right.
Resistance.
For the horde. Also Jeff Jarvis, who is about to, what's the opposite, matriculate, commensulate?
I don't know.
He's going to walk in the commencement.
Ridiculous. Doesn't this, have such a huge
head. It looks good. No, it looks good. You look like the professor on those videotapes. Video professor. Jeff Jarvis.
Professor, a special effect. On
the- tenured professor of journalism at the City University of New York. Actually, are you?
I am.
Full professor.
Can't get rid of me.
He's the man. Cannot be fired. He also blogs at Buzz Machine. Good thing, because he blogs at BuzzMachine.com. And his book, latest, is Public Parts, a must read. Fabu. And, of course, the wonderful Gina Trapani, mother of Etta.
Mother of us all.
You, that's all you need to know.
Yep. Yep, that does seem to be my primary thing these days.
It does. It changes your identity completely to have a kid.
It does. It really does.
You didn't see it, but Henry walked in during the show, and I actually wandered off because I had to give him stuff because he's today was supposed to be his driving test, but he didn't have the insurance card for the car. And you guys were handling the conversation just fine, so I just took off.
But that's, you're good, Leo.
That's no the priority. Your kids.
Yep.
Chad's worried for silence, but then again, not. We never have silence with this group.
Well, that's the thing. I knew you. It was during the Flickr conversation, and I figured you had more than enough.
Yeah, I was ready to just play the changelog video and hope Gina just took it after that.
Oh, absolutely.
I've started doing. I've taken. This is actually a bad sign. I've taken to wandering off during the shows a lot. But now that I have Ingress, I have an excuse anyway.
Yeah. You got to get that XM.
Yeah. There's some XM out there. Thank you, everybody. We do Twig This Week in Google every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 2100 UTC on twit.tv. Do watch live. We'd love to have you in the chat room. We obviously pay attention to the chat room. In fact, half our material comes from you. But if you can't, we've got on-demand downloads, audio and video, available at twit.tv and wherever podcasts are found, including iTunes, Google Listen, Dog Catcher, which is a really good one for Android, Instacast on iOS and all those other podcast locales, Zoom Store. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on Twig.